Every year has their revivals, revisits, and reflections on the past, but it's always interesting when over a generation later we see applied knowledge taking over the past. In the seemingly final state of the PlayStation 2, we now have in our hands a hardware hackless means for taking over the entire console. Any dubious means aside, this is great for preservation and flexibility of now sunset consoles. Gaming companies may be changing up their strategies, but we're still able to bring you your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki, on the show where every gamer has a voice.
The voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio tonight, joining you once again live here the day after the 4th of July, making it July 5th, of course. My name, Rob Roberts, joining you here in studio. Not joining us tonight, unfortunately, Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers. She has the night off to take care of some personal business. But joining me, thanks to the magic of Discord, while we continue to socially distance for over 120 days now, say hello to Techmaster Loki.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, I'm doing okay. How are you doing, Loki?
I'm doing pretty good.
It's good to talk to you, as always. How was your week, personally, before we get into games?
It was uneventful, really.
Just, yeah?
Yeah. Staying inside.
Did you do anything for, like, the 4th or I don't know, Canada Day or anything?
We weren't planning on it, and then we ended up trying to get some fireworks, and so we managed to hit up one of the booths that had just like a very few left. I mean, they were sold out in a lot of places because it's 8 o'clock at night on, you know, 4th of July.
Yeah.
So we managed to get some small stuff, and then the neighbors were setting them off. So we just kind of combined ours with theirs and just watched them set some stuff off.
Gotcha. Now I'm kind of like over the explosions and all this. It was fun when I was a kid, but I'm kind of like, so I get it. You do it for your kids. But for me, I'm kind of over it at this point. I'm just like, I was just hiding in the house trying to keep the cat protected away from all the noise, and it was something. So I'm glad it's over. Let's be real.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, assume it's over. I mean, because, you know, everyone still has stuff left over. It seems like everybody, since they've have been social distancing for a while, and so they haven't been spending their money going out and stuff, so they dropped all that money into fireworks, it seems like.
Oh, yeah. That's actually probably a really good point, is that you have a lot of people that are probably saving money because they're not doing as much as they used to do. And now it's like they spend them on, like, dumb things, like me buying an arcade cabinet this week, but we'll come back to that later. Some of the chatters, Loki, are noticing your shirt. And for those on the podcast feed that can't see the visuals, although if you want to join us for the visuals, we do tape live every Sunday night at the Voice of Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOG Network, VOG Network. Sunday nights at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. Or if you subscribe to our Twitch channel at VOG Network, you can watch the video on demand at any time. But of course, our audio podcast is free, as it has been for years and years and years. But one of our listeners here in chat, Pog Culture, is saying, I'm sorry, it was Fifth Dream, same chat caller. Fifth Dream says, I spot a Prince of All Cosmos on your t-shirt. And it is. You've got like a yellow and black shirt on, which isn't very Katamari colors. What is this? Just a Katamari shirt you found?
Yeah, it's an official shirt from it. I had my coworker was cleaning out his closet, and he had some shirts that he hadn't worn. And so he's all... You recognize that I know what these games are. So I have one Katamari shirt, and then I've got two Nobi Nobi Boy shirts.
Oh, nice.
And I guess they were from the actual developers or something like that. I don't remember where he said he got them, but he says, like, I haven't worn them ever, so here you go. I'm like, cool.
Hey, free shirts. Love it. All right. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the news. We'll get into tonight's kickoff topic. So why don't you start us off, Loki?
All right. So this is pretty cool. I've been like asking for this since 2006. I mean,
since 2006, Loki.
Yes. So every year I always ask, I'm like, when are they going to do something like they did with 2006 where they have, you know, demos? It's like bringing E3 home, you know, where you can play.
I think
all
we
the
talked
demos
about that literally last week or like 2 weeks ago. I think that was under discussion just last week. Yeah.
So that's finally going to happen again. So now, since E3 isn't really happening and the whole Xbox thing and everybody's got to be, you know, distant and doing all the digital stuff. They've announced that they're going to be doing this digital Summer Games Fest event starting July 21st. And I think it's going to run for a week or so. So they're going to have, it said up to over 60 demos you can try at home. Now, I'm guessing that a lot of these are probably going to be indie games, but there's going to be quite a few demos that you can check out on the Xbox One if you have one of those. Although, kind of wish I had one, but I don't know. Just to check out demos, maybe not the best idea, but pretty cool to see that they're doing something like that. And with such large numbers, I'm hoping that some of this spills over onto PC, because I'd love to check out a PC demo of some of those Xbox games or Microsoft games. But we'll have to see. Right now, it's just specifically Xbox. But I'm very excited to see this. They didn't really state which games yet. They did mention, though, Chris Tales, and they're going to have Destroy All Humans, which I think is the remake of that, and Skatebird was another one, which that was just out on the Steam indie showcase that they did, and then the Welcome to Elk and Hellpoint. So
I imagine there's going to be several games that we don't know about yet that Microsoft plans to unveil at the event that they're going to be doing in July, which I think we are starting to narrow down the time frame of when that's going to be happening. I'm sorry, I might have missed this. Do we know if they're using the cloud gaming to deliver this, or is this something where you're going to have to download demos of a significant size to be able to play them? Or are they doing? Are we going to see the cloud stuff get invoked?
It does not say that they're doing the cloud stuff. It just says that it's going to be unlike normal demos that you would see on there. A lot of these are going to be very early. It's basically kind of like show floor demos that they would have had.
Right.
Which I think is kind of how they did it in 2006.
But it is.
It doesn't really necessarily say that they're going to be using like Games Pass or the cloud streaming or anything like that to do this. I guess we'll find out a little bit more once that rolls around July 21st.
The only thing that's like kind of a bummer with so many games and having to download them all is that, of course, this would be the same month that certain large internet providers like Comcast, I'm looking at you, have decided, after they were the good guys for disabling the bandwidth meters for so long, this is going to, because of COVID, that somehow COVID just went away, even though it's actually worse than it's ever been. So Comcast has decided to re-enable those bandwidth caps for whatever reason, even after showing that for several months that data caps are just they're invented, they're made up. Now, granted, I noticed that mine came back in July. If you have Comcast, you have a bandwidth cap again, too. I noticed my bandwidth cap got higher. It went to a weird, like, instead of like 1024 megabyte or yeah, no, 1024 gigabytes or whatever, right? A terabyte. I noticed that it's like 1226 or something, a little, it's kind of like a higher number for whatever reason. But still, 60 demos, that's going to be a lot of traffic. Now, on the flip side, if this are all going to be cloud delivered, then you start to run into some of the issues that people are having with Stadia, right? Which is how much bandwidth is that going to eat up if I'm doing, 4K gaming for a significant amount of time? But the bandwidth isn't too bad for 1080p. I noticed that when I was playing Stadia on my PC a few months ago. So,
I mean, I would assume since these are demos, it's going to be, the file size is going to be much smaller. Mm-hmm. So I would assume that it shouldn't be too bad. And probably out of the 60 plus games that they're going to have, I'm assuming that you're not going to want to play it necessarily everything.
Questbuster in chat says, Comcast, COVID has somehow disappeared. Activate data caps. Confused worker. But COVID is worse now than Comcast. Your lack of faith is disturbing. I actually imagine the conversation went just like that. I think you're correct. Bobby Blackwell says, good news. They upped me to 1.2 terabytes. So Bobby is experiencing the same thing that I did. So woohoo. Now,
how generous of them.
Yeah, I know. Now, to be fair, I looked at how much we used last month. And we used maybe 690 gigs last month, which is about half that, which is interesting, though, because that's way higher than we've ever been before. I mean, we were maybe at like 450. Besides the one month my Xbox went crazy and like downloaded the same thing over and over, and I went way over the cap. Usually I've been around like 450 maybe, but Alan and I both work from home now, and I do a lot of multimedia work. So I'm oftentimes sending big files back and forth. I have to do that for work. So I can see why we went up all of a sudden another 200 gigabytes. But I can't exactly spend, you know, a ton of gigs downloading a bunch of demos. So I'm going to have to like cherry pick the stuff I want to play. I mean, I guess my Xbox only holds a terabyte anyway, and there's some things I'm not looking to delete anytime soon, but it is kind of an interesting little downside to, you know, because like in 2006, when we talked about the Xbox 360 demos, not only were those smaller for sure, but
yeah.
Also there was only like four of them. There was like Lost Planet.
Lost Planet, Dead Rising, I think, and MotoGP 06.
Yeah.
It was all Capcom games.
The number's gone way up, so there's going to be way more to pick from. And you know there's going to be some people that want to play every single one of them, you know, and due right. to the well, world situation, have time to do so.
Yeah, and I don't know. We'll have to see how it is. I hope they're not like time exclusive demos. Like, I hope it's like you have a certain window to download them, but then you can play them for like a long time. Because I remember that's what they did with like the original Saints Row, is they had it, you can play it for a while. And like, I played that demo like a bunch of times, I think until the game came out, because it was a 30-minute demo.
One of my still favorite E3 memories to this day was when the Nintendo DS was somewhat new. It was like the first year everybody had them, and they had those demo stations where you could download a demo to your DS. And a friend of mine at the time that went with me and I both downloaded the Luminous demo that was on 3DS. Or was it? No, I'm sorry. It was the creators. The creators of Luminous did a different game. That was the. Oh my God! Why can't I remember the moment? Meteos.
What
was the name of it?
Yeah,
Meteos. So yeah. Meteos was the demo, and I remember we downloaded it, and he played it the entire car ride home, and we brought it home. We didn't turn off our DSs the entire time. Like, we would charge them, keep them on charger at night. It made the trip home somehow because we kept the lid closed, charged them again, and we were showing it to friends back home here. Like, hey, look, here's the Meteos demo on DS, because we haven't shut off our 3DS or our DS, in like a week. But that was awesome. I loved that. I missed that was one of my favorite years. Yeah. It was like, I literally brought a piece of E3 home with me, and I'm paying the power bill for it. So, VidPower 573 says, these data caps caused me to refrain from trying out demos for all these new giant file size games. Let me ask this question for those of you that feel the way that VidPower does. Cause I see some of you guys in chat are like, well, LOL, I don't have bandwidth caps, to which I say, how nice for you. But the rest of us have to deal with bandwidth caps. No, look, lucky you, but you know you're lucky. So the rest of us that are dealing with bandwidth caps, let me ask this question. Would you rather that they put out the demos where it's a file size and you download whatever, or would you like a cloud-based solution where maybe you have the power to play a demo in 1080p, versus 4K, you know, and you have some sort of power over using cloud gaming as a solution. So I asked that to VidPower and anybody else in that situation in chat. What would you prefer?
And we still don't know how they're going to deliver them. We just assume that it's downloadable demos. Maybe it would be, like, I could see the argument of doing the cloud-based solution, because in that way, you can't have people data mining your stuff, because I could see that happening quite a bit. I don't know.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point, is that they got to be careful what they put in these demos, because data miners love to mine. I mean, look at what happened with the Pokemon DLC, right? Like, everybody already knows what's happening with the next DLC, because for whatever reason, it was in the data files for this DLC. Well, I shouldn't say that like they did a dumb thing, because they probably have to do that to set up the infrastructure for both DLC to run. So for whatever the reason, people data mined it, and now everybody knows what Pokemon are going to be in the next DLC as well. So you're right. Data miners will go crazy if given the opportunity to do so. And cloud streaming will get around that completely.
Yeah, it would. Or at least I would think it would be harder to do that if they could.
Yeah. VidPower573 in chat says, I would be in favor of cloud streaming for demos and full downloading for games that I buy. I love that as an option, and I really hope that is a place that Microsoft is considering going, like if they're really going to get this thing right. Like, I would love the download it and play, or, you know, maybe you're on the go on your phone, or just for whatever reason, for bandwidth reasons, you just want to stream or a demo or what have you. I would love options.
Do they still have that option with, I know Sony was doing it for a while where they would have these games that they'd put out as like a, not even really a trial, it was a full game trial where you get an hour or two to play the game and try it out. And if you wanted to play more, you could just purchase the game and then play from there. Otherwise, you know, you could just check out like a section of the game.
I don't know if Microsoft's done that. Somebody in chat would have to help me out with that. PlayStation's also unique, though, that it has that whole share play thing. So, like, if you just want to try a friend, and people kind of forget it's there, but it's a great feature. If you just want to try a friend's game, that is also a cloud-based solution, essentially. It's different, but you're essentially streaming a video game that you can try yourself. And I think that's how I played Bloodborne for the first time, was through share play. So that's an option. But as far as the time things, I always associate that with Steam, because Steam does those free game weekends all the time. Like, they just had DJ Max not that long ago as like a free game weekend, and they do that kind of stuff all the time. I don't know if Microsoft's done it. Yeah, somebody in chat would have to help me out.
Yeah, it was a little bit different than those free game weekends, because I know they still do those. It was like once a month they would pick like several games that they would allow you to play 1 or 2 hours of for free. And I think it was even like a perk of PlayStation Plus or something like that, where it's like full game demos or full game trials. And then once you play those, you could, like, if you could beat the game in like an hour or whatever, then cool, you'd be able to buy it. But I think you could also purchase those games as well. It was kind of a way to like save from the developers having to create, you know, unique demos for the games. Or you know, I also like with the ones that they do where the demo is completely separate from the actual game. Like, they did that. I guess it wasn't necessarily a demo, but it was like a prologue or something like that. Like Dead Rising 2 did something like that. They had a prologue. I don't know. I'm just curious. I can't wait to see what they have.
Some more comments from chat. And this is a really good one from Hype Mayhem that says, for games, I'm against streaming, if only because if your internet goes out, shit out of luck. Which, you know, for all the stuff that we're sitting here going, data caps, there's, you know, when we're talking about our fast internet, there's some people out there that live in rural parts of the country or Alaska, or as ActDef pointed out, Mexico, that are going like, must be nice to have fast internet so you can even do cloud gaming in the first place. So there's that whole angle too, is that if cloud streaming were the only way to do it, that's not really going to work for everybody either. It'll work for a big chunk of the population in the countries that they tend to focus on first, US, Canada, the Europe regions that they are in, and so forth, but it may not work for everybody. So that's a very interesting call out too, which is why choice would be great. But there may be reasons why they don't want you to have choice. I don't know. But I the perfect next Xbox, in my opinion, would have cloud streaming or download and play on your own side at the touch of a button, which one could argue Sony started to kind of have that in place with PlayStation Now, but I don't think it's quite as seamless as I think we would like, right? Shouldn't it just be like a little switch before you launch the game? Play X Cloud, play local, right?
Yeah, and well, PlayStation Now, I mean, it just certainly doesn't have the appeal that, you know, something like Game Pass has. So I think they really need to figure out that how they're going
to
do.
Sony has a chance to step it up with PlayStation 5. Like, they have every ability to say, okay, so here's the new version of PlayStation Now on the PlayStation 5, and they can reinvent it any way they want, really. So there is that.
But I don't think they're right now in a position where they think that they're threatened by it. I think they're just like, yeah, we're the number one, you know, game in town right now, and so we're not going to do anything. So I think the ones that have the most to lose are going to be the ones that innovate more. So we'll see, you know, more from the Microsoft side of things than we would Sony, until Sony gets beaten down and then they'll finally get their act together.
Interesting way to put it. I don't know if Sony's necessarily, I mean, it for me, like, all of this technical stuff, like, at the end of the day, a lot of it doesn't matter I mean, it does, but it's not going to matter nearly as much as what do those launch games look like? Like, which system has the games that people are going to go for? And, you know, Microsoft's likely going to come out with a new Halo right out the gate. I think we all know that. But Microsoft also has that interesting, you know, complexity where you kind of don't have to buy the new console. The new Halo will still work on your old Xbox.
Right.
So
yeah.
They're not exactly encouraging people to upgrade either, but I can also see if you're Microsoft and you're trailing in the game a little bit right now, you're just happy to have people in your ecosystem. Like, every Game Pass subscription is a giant fucking victory, right? And Game Pass, you know, I use it. I do think it's great, honestly. It's just going to be very interesting to see what the console wars look like in just a few months. And once we really know everything about these new systems. So, Pele Hanomeo with another point in our chat saying internet speed is fine. It's the 4,000 mile round trip to streaming servers. That's the problem. So you and I are a little spoiled in Northern California, whereas almost assuredly in Silicon Valley, which is less than a 2-hour drive from here, there's always going to be a server of some sort. So we don't have to worry about when I play Final Fantasy 14 online, those data centers are in Natomas. They moved them to Natomas. So I have a great ping in that game because they're in my freaking backyard practically. So you're right. The distance for how far it is to the servers is going to be an issue as well. So, yeah. Anyway, anything else we want to say on the demos? It feels like there's not too much else to say until they're actually out and we know what all to be playing, but it's exciting. It is making a comeback.
Yeah, and it's not just, you know, the demos as well. I believe that the actual show that they're doing, the digital show, is on the 21st as well. So that whole week we're going to get some more news about the Xbox and what's going on there. So very exciting. Only a few more weeks away.
Yeah, that's only what? About two weeks and change away. Yeah. That's cool. All right. Awesome. All right. Well, let's get into we haven't been streaming a lot of demos this weekend. Well, maybe you have. I don't know. Well, let's talk about the types of games that we have been playing this week and how was your gaming week. Again, Dar Sakura has the night off. She's taking care of some personal issues tonight. She will be back next week with us, so we'll get her gaming week then. For now, Loki.
It's been all Minecraft, pretty much. So I've been working on stuff with the Realm and everything, and I was trying to add more add-ons to the game. So those are like the mods for Bedrock. And so a lot of it ended up being trying to get the server to cooperate, because I tried to upload everything with it and it won't upload sometimes when they have some network issues. And then the other times that it does upload, because of certain restrictions that they have on the realms, which is there's parts, I don't know what exactly is deemed experimental gameplay, but it's one of the options that they have in your actual worlds that you make is with these add-ons. Some of them require experimental gameplay in order to run, and realms is supposed to not support that. And so that causes your add-ons to break in very different ways each time. So I was trying to get a few on there just to kind of add some more difficulty to the game, like add some more mobs and everything. And the problem I was having, well, I had lots of problems. So the first one I wanted to add was the Minecraft Earth characters, or the mobs that are from that game, which it doesn't really change anything. It just makes things look a little bit different, which is kind of cool. None of that worked. Or if they were spawning, they're all invisible. And then I had an issue where I tried getting these mutant creatures to spawn, and I had purposefully removed the creeper out of the game because that thing just explodes like crazy and just will tear apart everything that you have. I'm like, okay, I don't want that near my house, blowing a hole in the house. So I purposefully took it out of there. Well, when I uploaded it to the realm, somehow it's still there. Because I think what happens is it'll actually, they have a key that's associated with each add-on. And because of that, it, I think, copies that stuff over. So if it's already in their database, it may just, you know, pull it from there. So the modifications I made didn't seem to go through, but it was invisible as well. So big hole. Thankfully, I was smart and backed up my stuff when I'm doing all that. So I ended up making a few modifications. I did get one to work, which was, they have the brand new mob Strider. It's a little creature that walks on lava. So I made one that's in the overworld, like called a Depth Strider. And so that's kind of cool. So I made it for my kids because they wanted a strider to walk around with on the overworld, but they die in water. So, and it rains all the time by our house. So I had to do something different. So I did all that. And then I've been having issues with mobs spawning in my house. So like right before I logged off today, my son doesn't know it yet, but there are skeletons that spawned up in our main living room and it killed one of his birds. So,
oh no.
We'll have to respawn that one. But yeah, just running into all sorts of weird stuff, especially with the new update that came out a couple weeks ago. It's changed how stuff spawns in the game. And so even though you're supposed to be able to keep the light levels high enough to where they won't spawn, that's how it knows whether you have a house or not, or like a base or whatever. If you keep the light levels up, the rules should cause it not to spawn in your house. Something is broken right now, which happens with any update, and it's not working correctly. So I'm having stuff, even though I've lit up everything, I'm having mobs spawn all over the place. Also could be because our base is like 5 stories tall. So it might be something involved with that, but it's causing problems.
Meanwhile, so I dig a hole into the side of a cliff and that's where I live in Minecraft.
Oh, I thought about streaming some of it, but like already gotten so far into it already. But like, it's a complete system right now. We've got like automatic sorting systems and mob farms all over the place. It's elaborate right now. So maybe later when we reboot the whole thing again, we can
People probably wouldn't mind a tour of the current space. Like I would still be willing to stream Animal Crossing, even though I haven't gotten it from the very beginning. But I could show everybody how the roses have grown out of control on my island because it rains all the flipping time.
Yeah, so we beat the Ender Dragon today. I was building because I have a network of tunnels in the end, or not the end, the Nether, to go to all these different biomes that are not near our house. So I have all that. And then the new update added this thing called it's like a soul speed or something like that. And so if you're running on soul sand, which normally slows you down, it'll actually speed you up. So I just put that on the floor in all my tunnels and you can zip around like the whole map. So the next thing we're doing is going to the Woodland Mansion, which is another like kind of boss area. And then there's a few other things we have to do, and they were pretty much done. It's just kind of adding on to it. So that's what we've been doing. And then aside from that, of course, Orna, I've been playing that. I did download the Iron Man VR game, but I just didn't get a chance to set it up and play it. But I know my kids want to play that. So
I have been taking areas like crazy in Orna. I'm becoming that person that we all hated in the beginning.
Well, there's people taking stuff back from me, but I've been like, I've been trying to just, you keep spamming it and you eventually take them. So
yeah. All right.
That's it.
Well, then my gaming week, I've also been playing a bit of Orna as usual, kind of the good old standby. It's been playing a little more Pokemon Go as well with the new event that's going on that kind of leads into the Pokemon Go Summer Fest or Go Fest that's anywhere this year, obviously, because of everything going on in the world. But they have some events leading into it, and they released a new duck Pokemon whose name escapes me right now. It's like Duckmon, or so it's a very generic name. Somebody will say it in chat, but they just released that, and then they have all these little quests where if you catch so many Pokemon and like throw an excellent and all these things, it's supposed to, if a lot of trainers do it, unlock new Pokemon that will be available during Go Fest, which the trainers are going to complete it. They always do. I've never seen them actually hold back on anything. So thank you, Ducklet. Thank you, ActDef. See, I knew it was a very generic kind of name. But that's still fun, and it's nice to have like little new things here and there. Pokemon Go keeps that game motivating. And still playing Ingress, of course. Always good to see people. There was an Ingress virtual event that happened yesterday where it's kind of like, we're going to all play Ingress at the same time in our house, but since we can't do anything but recharge, that's what we're going to do, is have a recharge party. So it's interesting, but that's what they got to do right now. It's the responsible thing to do. We can't all like meet at a restaurant like we used to do. Okay, so outside the usuals, let's talk about some of the new stuff, and I bet you guys want to hear about this, all right? So this week on Monday, and I've been teasing this for the past couple weeks, is that I ordered myself a birthday present. So my birthday was at the end of last month, and so I spent a little bit of money and bought myself something on Arcade 1-Up that I wanted. I wanted an Arcade 1-Up machine. I didn't have one yet, And I was like, I'm going to buy one when there's a game that comes out where I'm like, ooh, I got to have that. I almost bought the Mortal Kombat one, but I never did because I was like, oh, we don't have room for it. We don't have room for it. And then earlier this year, they announced the thing that finally got me, a Burger Time arcade cabinet. Burger Time's, you know, those who've been listening to OLR a long time, Burger Time's one of my jams from the 1980s. I remember that game as a kid. And not only did they release a Burger Time cabinet, they released a limited edition Burger Time cabinet. So they're only going to make like, it's something like 3,075 of these. And based on my certificate, I have machine number 2,604. Something like that. I think that's right. Or was it 2,406? I forget, but it's one of those ways. So I did get one of these machines, and it's got four games on it. It's got Burger Time, Bad Dudes, Karate Champ, and Caveman Ninja. And the machine took me about 2.5 hours to build. And you probably want to see what the darn thing looks like. So let me just show some of the footage here on stream that I shot in the living room where I put this. And it probably took me about 2.5 hours to build. And it is similar to building IKEA furniture. But I actually found it to be a little bit easier than building IKEA furniture because they actually put all the different parts in little bags. They're like, use a screw from the A bag, use a wooden thing from the B bag, and so forth. It wasn't so bad to put together. I was able to do it mostly myself. And I'm not saying that in a flex kind of way. I'm saying that in a, this really wasn't that bad type of way. The hardest part were the hinges, because you can see, if you're looking at the video, you can see the monitor is slanted like you would expect an old arcade machine to be. And so it has to slant just right against the two side panels. So you have to attach these hinge parts. And that was the hardest part by far. And I needed Alan's help on that to shine a light, because I couldn't see everything I was doing. So I was like, come over here and shine a light right in this spot so I can see what I'm doing. Anyway, so you can see in the video, for those that are watching on Twitch, it just ran through the whole little boot up sequence. You choose your game, you hit the button to start it, and then there I am playing Burger Time. Of course, it's kind of hard to play the game appropriately with one hand while you're filming with the other, because you can probably see my, you know, fat reflection there in the monitor, but whatever. But there you go. I am making my way through the game, and I think that's about where the B-roll ends there. So let me
and
go back.
So who's ass in there? It knows the high score. Second place is.
It might be me. excuse me, second place and fifth place. Thank you. Okay, so yeah, so I act like I'm 11, whatever. Yes, I put ass as the initials. I do it every time. Well, not every time. I used to put VOG in, and I still, if I'm at a professional environment, like when I'm at California Extreme, I will put VOG as the initials, as a cheap plug for our little network here. But when I'm in the privacy of my own home, it's all about ass. All right. Looking in chat at some of the comments, VidPower573 says, love that classic Burger Time game music. Yep. Bonds006 also spotted the high scores. Yeah. Questbuster says, classic Burger Time. So good. Yeah, it was. It was great. Like, it looks very sharp on that LCD monitor. You know, it's different because it's not a CRT monitor like the 80s. So it does look a little different. But I mean, come on. Y'all have played MAME. I know you have. So you've probably played these games on a modern monitor. But there's something about the actual, like, correct resolution on that screen. And it's a nice vertical fit. Like, it's not like you're trying to play Burger Time on your widescreen monitor where you have this black space. There's something about the way it fills out the screen just perfectly that is very refreshing, quite frankly. So I played a little bit of Burger Time, of course. And then I played some of the other games, too. I played Karate Champ, which is why there's two joysticks for each side on that thing. I don't know if you saw when I was... run the bureau again, but you'll notice the machine actually has four sticks on it. That's because each player needs two sticks in Karate Champ. So even though everything is decked out in Burger Time, it still has everything. You only need one button for Burger Time too. You don't need two. So for other games like Caveman Ninja and I think Bad Dudes may have used two buttons as well. That's the one game I haven't played yet, is Bad Dudes, because Alan played Bad Dudes on the cabinet, and that's when Mr. Smush decided, this is my cabinet now, and he decided he found his way out of jump on top of that and so forth, and you know how that goes. Oops, you know how that goes when you're a cat owner. So, all right. Questbuster says, wow, those cabs look great. They really do. I'm pretty impressed. Like, I'm going to be honest. I want to buy another one. and one of my friends has really gotten into collecting them and was like, hey, Rob, hey, the Walmart in Auburn right now has the Pac-Man one for $50. And I'm like, number one, fuck you for telling me that. Number two, fuck you again for telling me that when you know I want one of these things. Number three.
Like the full size one? Or are we talking like the bar top?
The full size Pac-Man one. Because that's been out for how long now? They're probably unloading it. I don't know if it's still there, Loki. I see you making a face. I'd have to ask my friend.
That's not a bad. Like, I don't need it. But,
but you kind of want it so you can hack the shit out of it. I know you do.
It's kind of hard to pass it up.
I know. We're watching the gears turn in Loki's. We're watching him plot live on air. As Joe and Hunter Matt's like, the wheels are turning in Loki's mind. Dr. Tetsuya says, that's how it starts.
I've got a candy cap in the garage. I can't. It's just the, I need the monitor replaced or fixed or something because the monitor doesn't turn on. Mm-hmm. But if the monitor is fixed, I mean, I have MAME on. Well, had MAME on there. I took the computer apart, but I'd have to build a new one anyways. But in all ideal situations, I have a dedicated system to do that, and it's six buttons and everything like that.
Yeah, it's the one that used to be here in the studio.
No.
Right. Oh, no, different one.
No.
Different one.
No, I have an actual – it's a Sega Astro City. Oh, it's okay. It's a, like the ones you'd see at Arcade Infinity that I used to play like
– Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
All the games on there. So, yeah, it's like those. It's just the monitors. It's a, you know, a CGA CRT, and I don't know what happened when I moved it out of the house into the garage. Like, I tested it before I left, you know, moved it, and it was fine. And I moved in the garage, and it sat in there for, like, a little bit. And I tried doing it again, and it doesn't power on anymore. It's old, so it just needs to be repaired. But who are you going to get to repair that? And, like, I don't want to touch any of those capacitors to, you know, ground those out to replace the whatever. I don't know how to fix any of that stuff. So I got to find someone to do it.
I really do want another cabinet. Like I kind of want that Mortal Kombat trilogy one because I know Alan would be into that one as well. And you know, there's other new ones that are coming out that I want, but the reality is I promised Alan I'm putting the brakes on it. I'm not going to actually buy another one. So hopefully I don't miss out on too many of them or they reprint or something. I don't want to speak too much out of turn, but once this COVID thing gets a little more under control, because it's really bad, especially this month right now, but maybe in a month or two when things hopefully at least start to go down significantly again and it's not as crazy as it is right now, Alan and I are looking into buying our own home as opposed to renting one. Finally becoming big boys and getting our own home. And the nice thing about that is that, you know, then we won't be beholden to how many pets we can own and things like that. So the deal is, when we buy our own home, the reward is Alan gets to have another cat and I benefit from that too. And then I get to have more arcade cabinets and Alan benefits a little bit from that too. So that's the deal. So I'm hoping, fingers and toes crossed, and I hope I'm not talking too much out of turn. But the ironic thing is, by the time we all return to OLR in the same place, we might not actually be in the same place anymore.
Fine.
Yeah, it'll be a nice little reboot whenever that happens. So we'll see.
Yeah.
So yeah, that process could take like a year. I don't know how long it's going to take. I don't even know if we have the money for it, but we've been saving for a little bit, so that'll be nice. Anyway, enough personal stuff. Let's get back to some of the other things that I've been playing this week. So one of the other games I've been playing this week, Animal Crossing, of course. You might think same old, same old, but I was reinvigorated a little bit on Animal Crossing with the whole deep sea diving thing. That's kind of cool, and it gives new stuff to collect. And it's not like there's only like four things in the ocean right now. There's at least like 10 or 12 probably that I've found so far. So there's a variety of things to find in the ocean right now, and it's a nice little kick in the butt that game needed, because I feel like, oh, I have a new thing I can do now. There's something new to collect, and oh, there's this otter that will show up and give me random new furniture patterns in the mermaid set and so forth. And I really hope this is the type of little kick in the pants that Animal Crossing keeps getting every month or every 6 weeks or so, because I think that's going to keep the game really exciting. I'm sure it's just a matter of time before we have some like substantial DLC for this game. Like, Nintendo would be fools not to do that. But the free content updates that we're getting in the meantime, or I guess if we get a lot of free content updates, they don't actually sell any DLC, that's cool too. But I would think Nintendo would be morons not to try to sell some DLC at some point. I don't know what they'll do, we'll see. So anyway,
yeah, it would be interesting to see what they're going to do to expand on that. I mean, I'm surprised that they haven't had any DLC yet.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, some folks in chat. I'm just taking a look at chat. SS200 Matt says, buying Smush a home. Y'all are renting from him. Yeah. Bobby Blackwell says, dedicated studio space. Studio Smush. Well, technically, we kind of, I mean, like, this is the family room in our house that we rent right now, and it's a dedicated studio space. My husband lets me get away with a lot of shit, but he knew what he was marrying. So he knew he would be marrying a radio show as well as me. So it happened. Sia Tiberian chat says, Pocket Camp has been getting good with doing a new event every few weeks. Like every month you get a larger event and 3 weekly smaller events. Yeah, so it would be cool if the Switch version adopts a similar rhythm and we see a lot of new things, because just the little things like exploring the ocean is a big kick in the pants. All right, one more game I want to talk about that I played this week that's new-ish. It actually came out a couple weeks ago, but I just got around to playing it this week. So do you remember a couple weeks ago when I was doing Japanese releases, I was talking about the Namcot collection. Or no, it was because of the story of the Pac-Man Championship D-Make that's in the Namcot collection in Japan.
Right.
Well, that collection also came out here as I think it's the Namco. I don't know the official name of it, but it's like Namco Collection Volume 1 and Volume 2. And it's on Switch and it's on PlayStation 4. So I actually picked it up on PlayStation 4 just because, I don't know, trophies or on. I don't know. I just picked it up on PlayStation 4 because that's where I wanted to buy it. I bought Volume 1 so I could actually play that D-Make of Pac-Man Championship Edition. And it's pretty cool, I gotta say. I should have grabbed some B-roll for tonight, but I didn't have the PS4 in the studio. Sorry, guys. But it's cool. And I guess some news is coming out this week that Namco may have adopted that from a ROM that somebody did in 2008. So it might actually be like a legitimized ROM hack of sorts. It's interesting. But I thought it was neat how the whole screen goes back and forth to kind of make up for the limitations of the NES. It's interesting. I like that. And then, of course, there's a ton of other games. It's, you know, a lot of the – it's pretty much nothing but NES ROMs. You know, things like Dig Dug, Tower of Draga, things like that. But what's interesting, I think they retained all the Japanese releases, because they all say Namcot at the bottom when you launch into the games. I don't remember that being the case in the U.S., and I don't think all these games even came out in the U.S. on the NES or Famicom, whatever. In fact, I know one of them is new in Volume 1, and I forget the full name of the game. Sorry, maybe somebody knows in chat, but there's like a cutesy Splatterhouse. I know that sounds a little weird, cutesy Splatterhouse, but if you think about it, the NES couldn't handle the realism of Splatterhouse. It couldn't handle those types of graphics. You remember that game? So they have like a cutesy cartoony version that came out, and that is in this collection. And what's interesting, I know it never came out in the US, and what's interesting about it, the title screen is still in Japanese, but they translated the text in the game. So it's like another kind of like new thing that's in the collection, and I think that's really cool. So I did buy Volume 1, and overall, yeah, it's a solid little collection of games. It's $20. I'm not sure if everybody's going to want to drop that kind of money on some retro games. I love retro games, though, so it was fine for me. I'll probably pick up Volume 2 eventually as well, because there's some really cool games in Volume 2 as well. I'm going to talk about one of them a little later. So, anyway, Bobby says, in the future, you don't need to bring the PS4 in the studio. Just hit the share button, capture 15 minutes of video, and move it to a USB stick. I always forget that you can move the video to a USB stick, but I'll do that. I'll remember that in the future. So, yeah, so I thought that was a nice little collection, so I enjoyed playing that. So the U.S. version of the Namcot collection, I approve. And I'll show you some of the championship edition either on a personal stream or maybe I'll do a follow-up video. That's something I've been looking at doing, is trying to do some follow-up like content. So maybe we'll do a breakout on championship edition a little later on in the D-Make. So, okay, that's it for my gaming week. So let's move on. Before I get into the news, I have a little bit of housekeeping I want to get into. Sorry, Loki, I didn't warn you about this. I need to do a little bit of a tangent. It has nothing to do with this show. It has nothing to do – well, it, a little bit has to do with podcasting. So let me get into it a little bit. I got some somewhat difficult news yesterday that a longtime listener that of my show, Horde House, and you guys may or may not remember, I had a show – I think it was around 2012 to 2000. No, it was probably 2011 to 2014, give or take a year. So look, it's been a while. I had a show called Horde House, and it was dedicated to World of Warcraft, and it was hosted with my buddies Extifer, Shane, and Grandpa, or you know him as Captain Matt on Starboard Power Coupling. You've heard all these people on OLR at some point or another, but we used to have a World of Warcraft-based show. And through that, we had kind of a different audience than we would have here on OLR, because the Warcraft community, you know, is very tight-knit, and you know, there's a lot of awesome people that I met through that. It's the thing I miss most about doing Horde House. I don't necessarily miss the game World of Warcraft, but I miss the people that I met through it. Because, you know, like, for example, Girls Gone WoW was an amazing show that used to be here at the Voice Geeks Network. They've continued on to WoW Radio, and they're doing just fine. And I would have never met those gals if it wasn't for my time in World of Warcraft. And that's just one of many examples. So amongst doing the show Horde House, and you guys are going to have to forgive me with my memory, I feel like he may have guest hosted even in one episode or something, but we had a listener on that show. His name was Haster. It was his online name. His real name was Steven. I can probably tell you that now. But his online name was Haster, and he listened on Horde House. He may have listened a couple times to OLR, but I know he was more of a WoW guy, so that was a show that he was listening to, and I met him through that. And interestingly enough, I don't know if it was because I think it was maybe a little bit because I used to talk about it a lot on Horde House. I was starting to get into a game called Ingress, which I still talk about on OLR to this day. But I know that Haster actually downloaded that game, joined the same team that I was on, and kind of fell off the deep end on that game as I did in that game. And so I ended up kind of interacting, even after Horde House was done and I wasn't really playing World of Warcraft anymore, I was still interacting with Haster in Ingress-related things. I met up with him at the big Chicago Anomaly that I took OLR off to go attend Memorial Day of last year. We had a big event here in Sacramento in October. He was here for that. I'm using the past tense, so you know, all know where this is headed. Haster passed away at the end of last week. And I'm really gutted about it. You know, the listeners that we have, that we're very fortunate to have here at Orange Lounge Radio, and I've said this many times before, you guys are like an extended family. And, you know, obviously this is one of those instances where I got to know somebody offline, in person, and interact with them. Maybe not every day. We weren't BFFs, but he was somebody I knew and I liked and I respected and I appreciated that he was supportive of many of the projects that I had done previously. So it's been hard. Yesterday was not an easy day when I got this news. What's making this more difficult and more complicated is that the family suspects the reason why he passed away was due to complications of COVID-19, which he had been, I presumed positive like 4 days before he passed. I think that means he had all the symptoms and talked to a doctor, and the doctor went, yep, you probably have this, but because the system is so backed up with tests right now, because you're in Texas, which is one of the states that it's, you know, blowing up everywhere. And again, I might be inserting my own dialogue in here, but for whatever reason, he didn't get an official test, but the family is presuming it is that situation. So, like, that just leaves me feeling even more frustrated and angry, because I feel like something like this could have been preventable. And I know you guys don't like it sometimes. Not all of you like it when I get on my high horse here and I preach certain things that aren't necessarily about video games and things of that sort, to which I say tonight, too fucking bad, because now this thing has consumed a friend of mine that I've met because of doing shows like this and because of my love of video games and all of this stuff, that now our incompetent government, which has allowed this thing to spread way more than it ought to have, and because of incompetent fools and assholes that are so brazen enough to sit there and think that this thing is a lie or masks don't help, even though all these scientists everywhere are seeing mass help. People will put images of the side of a box saying, look, it says it doesn't prevent COVID-19. No, you idiot. It doesn't prevent it, but it goes a long way in stopping the spread of it. that those disclaimers are on boxes of masks because they're not the N95 masks that medical providers are supposed to be using when they're exposed to the thing all day long. But when you go to a fucking bar or a restaurant or whatever it is, you can be bothered to put on a goddamn mask. I'm sick of this masks are a lie narrative. I am ready to fight people over this. If you believe that masks are a lie, I need you to fuck off. Because now this is fucking personal. A member of my family passed away this week because of this disease. Because some of y'all out there can't be bothered to take this seriously. And it's enraging. I'm just, I can't even put words in my mouth right now because I will see things online that drive me nuts. Thank God this is the weekend I also decided to deactivate Facebook, because I'll tell you what, if I hadn't deactivated, I would have said something to get myself banned this weekend. Trust. Please take this seriously. And I know many of you all out there are, but to those that are pushing this narrative that it's a lie and all this stuff, like, I hope you're comfortable with that choice. Because people that thought like that just took the life of a friend of mine. In chat over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork, Bobby Blackwolf says, in an RPG, if I get an accessory that gives me 30% disease resistance and the slot it goes in is open, I equip it immediately. Perfect analogy. Thank you. SG100 Matt says, we have not flattened the curve as well as other countries because people are not taking this seriously. Dark Tetsuya says, my wife and my dad are both immunocompromised, so they're both one idiot with a mask away from catching it. And DJ Rama S says, in a way, I'm glad my mom is not alive for this because she was immunocompromised. If someone got her sick, I'd kill them personally. Rama, I am right there with you. And I've even said it on this show that, like, I miss my mom every single day, but I am so happy she does not have to see this right now. I'm so happy she doesn't have to see this right now. Anyway, I had to vent a little bit. Ultimately, I said all that because I want to dedicate tonight's show to Hester's memory, and thank him for all the support over the years of podcasting and so forth. And I'm so sorry that this happened. And the immediate next words that want to leave your mouth are, I wish it could have been prevented. Could have. Let's move on and talk about games, Logie.
All right, so Nintendo has decided to finally fess up about the whole Joy-Con drifting issue, although they didn't really have much to say. So this is coming from Nintendo of Japan president Shintaro Furukawa, who noted he apologizes for any trouble that the hardware has caused, but he can't speak more on the matter because there's a class action lawsuit going on. So while that's nice that he apologizes for the trouble, what are they doing to fix the problem aside from the free fixes that they were doing? But like, I've had to already fix, you know, all of my Joy-Cons already. Well, I mean, I have two more to fix, but I've got the parts to do it. It's definitely something that's plaguing all of them. And it's something that they know is a design issue. Then change the design. Fix the problem. Don't just say, sorry.
Well, it is very interesting that they won't comment on it due to the ongoing lawsuit, which almost in some way gives that lawsuit a little more merit because, I mean, that's also probably just part of procedure. I don't want to, you know, speak completely out of turn, but it almost seems like, well, there may be something here that Nintendo really is legitimately concerned with.
Well, I think it's just like the whole scenario like they did with, not Nintendo, but Microsoft was with the Red Ring stuff. It's like basically to minimize until they're forced to take action because it's obvious that, you know, I think, I don't remember if the Red Ring, I know that they had lawsuits with that. I'm sure that this is, you know, similar. Basically, the lawsuit that was filed in 2019, still underway under arbitration in Washington, but the court denied Nintendo's dismissal. So, I mean, it's still going along. And, you know, by all means, you know, I would definitely take part of that, because, you know, it's obviously a thing. I had to buy stuff to fix it. It's ridiculous. I understand that they were offering to fix them, but Microsoft did the same thing. And I don't know.
Bobby Blackwolf in chat says legally they cannot comment on pending litigation. And yeah, I get that. But it does seem like with all of the lawsuits and all of like the crazy things we talk about on this show, like it's kind of weird to hear, even though, yes, I understand that that's in the back of my mind, it's still kind of weird to see that come full circle, where Nintendo actually go so far to comment and say no comment. Now, I understand the president was asked a question by a journalist and that's where it ended up. But it's, you don't always hear anything at all on a lot of these things that are going around, especially when Nintendo is usually the one that's the litigator. But anyway, yeah. I also, this story is just interesting to me because, knock on wood, I feel like one of the only people who's never experienced this issue. I don't have drifting Joy-Cons, again, knock on wood, because that's when it's going to break tomorrow. But I also play primarily on the television with a pro controller. Like 95%, if not more, of my Switch time is on the television with a pro controller. So I'm not.
And those may be different. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure the pro controllers, since they're built completely differently, they're fine. And then Alan now is a big Switch gamer, because not only is he playing Animal Crossing, but I've caught him this week, but I've seen him this week for many, many hours. In fact, he's probably playing it right now, playing through Dark Souls on the Switch, because that came out on the Switch and he loved that game on PC. So now he's playing it on the Switch. He's on a Switch Lite. And so I don't think that necessarily has the same problems either, because he has the integrated thing.
I would certainly hope not, because, yeah, right? it being integrated, you can't, I mean, it would be much harder to fix, I would think. I mean, I'm assuming if it is designed the same way as the Joy-Cons are, as far as having the same hardware in there, it's not too hard to fix. I mean, you can follow the instructions online. It's what I did. I just bought the stuff for my fix, and I think each one of the replacement analog sticks was like $10 maybe. But it's still, it's a hassle to have to do that. It should just not be breaking in the first place. I mean, the same could be said with like the DualShock controllers and the rubber on those. You know, I have, it's not DualShock, but I have an Xbox 360 third party controller where the rubber on the analog sticks cracked and is falling off. And so thankfully I have another defective one, the same model. I just took it apart and pulled the good pieces off and threw the rest away, so I could replace those. But it's still annoying that it happens.
Bobby Blackwolf says the pro controllers also got a software update to fix the drift. You know, now that you say that, I kind of remember that. But since that is also seamless, like it's like, oh, I kind of forgot that ever happened, because, you know, Nintendo just updates every now and then, right? So you just kind of let it.
I don't understand how a software problem would fix the drift problem. The drift is from dirt getting into where the sensor is, and it's causing fluctuations in the resistance on those pads. Mm. So it's making it feel, you know, the software, or I guess it would interpolate it as I'm pushing the controller in a certain direction, because it's dirt that's getting in there from the pad being rubbed back and forth. But I don't know. Whatever. I mean, if they have a solution that it fixes it and they could do an update that will fix it permanently, great. I would think, though, if they had a solution for that, they would have already done it. But it's still an issue.
Good comment here too on the whole litigation thing from Questbuster over twitch.tv/VogNetwork, who says, just look at Boeing's response over the 737 MAX. Many people faulted the software and the plane, but Boeing deflected admitting fault, because to admit it would open the floodgate to lawsuits. Yes, you can't really say, oh, yes, we're aware there's a problem. Oops, you just said there's a problem. Now the floodgates get open to lawsuits, although it seems like it's going to be inevitable. There will probably end up being some sort of settlement anyway, but I don't expect that you're just going to get cash in pocket. They're probably just going to have to set up some sort of exchange program, repair thing, which they're kind of already doing.
They already have, yeah.
Yeah, and they'll have to give away Zelda for free or something. Who knows? I don't know.
It was a hassle already to do that, and so I had signed up to do it, but like I had done it with the wrong controller at the time because I was only having like certain ones were drifting, and then eventually everything started drifting. So, and I just, by that point, it had been too long, and I was like, okay, I don't know how to change this to say, no, it's not the right Joy-Con, it's the left Joy-Con. And it was, I didn't trust that, you know, it was going to be done quickly. So I just went ahead and bit the bullet and, you know, instead of replacing them, because they're like $79 to replace a pair, which is stupid in the first place. I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, we'll see what develops as I'm sure this litigation is going to continue over the next 7 years. You know, by
SSJ100 Matt says they won't give Zelda away for free. They'll get 1-2 Switch for free. Haven't we suffered enough? Haven't we suffered enough? Why would they do that?
I'm like, the accuracy of that statement, I fucking hate it. Send it back. Oh, man. All right. Well, can't play 1-2 Switch if you have a broken controller. All right.
I don't want to.
All right. Anyhow. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, Extifer posted on Twitter and said that the baby game in 1-2 Switch is the most realistic game ever made. Oh, yeah. It's Brom is 1 month old today. I don't know if you know that. So Extifer's enjoying the dad life. So, all right. Anyway, let's move on. We have more stories to get to. And boy, I have a lot of difficult news tonight. There's no easy way to say it. And I don't want to make light of this either, because this news is terrible. And it's another huge loss in the World of Warcraft community. I have to admit, I did not know this individual. I didn't have a personal connection to this person as the person I just talked about a minute ago. But I know a lot of people really respected this person. And I know he was somewhat of a pioneer of sorts, I think, when it came to streaming and so forth in the World of Warcraft community. His online name was Wreckful. His real name was Byron Bernstein. I hope I said that right. I'm very sorry. But unfortunately, the news came this week that he passed away. And this came from his ex, Blue, and a close friend of his, Andy Milonakis, who, if I'm not mistaken, had an – that's the same guy that had an MTV show. Also.
Yes.
So anyway, I mean, people are people, and I'm not like – this is horrible what they're going through. They lost their friend. I am not about to make light of this in any way or another, but I think it also goes to show – number one, people are people. Celebrities are people. People you remember as kids are people. People that stream on Twitch for your entertainment are people. And everybody goes through their own ups and their downs and their challenges and all of this. So anyway, a lot of, you know, nice words and things that are said were said on Twitter. Things like, I wish we could have helped you. We all do. I'm sorry I couldn't. Thank you for being a part of my life. Heartbroken, still in shock. I feel a little awkward reading these quotes on air. I'm sorry. It's just, it's a little, you know, because these are people's personal feelings, even if they did post them publicly. And it's a lot of, you know, obviously a lot of emotions people are going through that they're trying to deal with and so forth. But you put it all together and it does seem like allegedly he may have taken his own life. And that is... you know, that's extremely devastating, especially when paired with some of the other things that have been going around Twitter, such as, because he has been a streamer for so long, there was a video floating around out there from several years ago, from like 2016 or something. And chat, feel free to correct me because I'm going off my memory and my memory ain't always so great. But I want to say in this clip, a chatter was basically saying, you know, you should kill yourself. And he was kind of reacting to that, and it's, you know, he was able to kind of roll it off and so forth, but you could tell for a moment there's like a part of that that kind of like got to him, you know, and it's just tragic that people would like go there in the first place. And we really have to take a good, hard, long look at the way we treat people on social media and on Twitch, and the way that we treat these people that we watch on Twitch. And I'm pretty sure this audience that's watching this show, after getting to know all of you, probably don't need to be told this. I'm saying it anyway, because you never know. I'm have a stranger watching tonight. Somebody might be lurking who's done this before. But when you say something like kill yourself to a stranger on the internet, those sorts of words carry a lot of weight, and you can't just go throwing it around like it's, you know, LOL, I was just kidding. because you don't know people's lives. You don't know what they're going through. And I think it's up to the rest of us who do try to conduct ourselves with integrity and try to keep things generally positive and keep the negatives to criticisms, but constructive ones and so forth online. I think it's up to the rest of us to call out bullshit behavior when we see it, and stick up for the streamers and so forth that we respect online and all of that. Anyhow, it's really tragic because Wreckful was only 31 years old. That's incredibly young, younger than me, younger than Loki, anyone on this show. He was a streamer and game developer. He'd used all those hours streaming World of Warcraft to start to make his own MMO, Everland. He had been open about struggles with depression and mental health, which is a very brave thing to do. Not everybody is able to do that. And I'm sure he was surrounded by love and support and so forth. Unfortunately, like any disease, treatment doesn't always end up being 100% effective. And God, I hope that really doesn't sound, I'm really not trying to minimize or make this horrible loss sound any less, but my point is that, like, you know, we have to be there to help people realize that people go through this and not mock people for this or challenge people with this. Like, are you sure you have this? Or, well, depression's just a myth to sell medication. Also, we have to really watch our language in challenging people that are very open with these types of struggles and so forth. Because again, you're not in somebody else's shoes. You don't know what they're going through. And most of all, stop bullying people online, on Twitch, on Twitter, on Facebook, because when you tell somebody KYS, that's what you're doing is you're bullying. And that behavior sucks and needs to stop. Sorry, I've been looking away from chat for a little bit, so I haven't seen you guys commenting on this. But SG100 Matt says, Wreckful would talk about battles with depression on a stream all the time in an effort to help others battling it as well. Sadly, he lost his own battle. And I think that's why this news may be affecting a lot of people, and why we're seeing a lot of people really pour out their feelings on Twitter, is I would bet there are many people, not only that were just fans that enjoyed his streams, enjoyed his content, but there's also many people out there that could probably relate. And it's hard. I went through an emotional bit a minute ago because somebody that I felt I could call a friend went through something terrible this week. And I bet there were many people that felt they could call Wreckful a friend as well. Rican Elite in chat says, hey, it's been a crazy week for real in the internet. It has been a crazy year and it's only July. It's been a crazy decade and it's only 2020. Like, I hear you. It's whew. Regan Elite continues, says, we need to listen to people out there because they might seem all good online and happy, but deep down inside they are hurting. Tiger Claw says, basically, it's best to be nice to them. They may say something stupid, but don't be mean to people for saying dumb shit. Educate, don't berate. SG100 Matt says, I was going to mention Etika. I hope I said that right. Anthony Bourdain were all public figures that performed in front of a camera. A lot of their pain was behind the scenes. Hype Mayhem in chat says, I've dealt with depression for years. There have been times where it's damn near killed me. Thank you for being brave and saying that. And let me be the first of many people in chat to tell you I'm glad you're still here with us. And I hope you will continue to be here with us every Sunday. And there's many of us that would be happy to listen if you ever needed it. SG100 Matt says, we're dealing with a very hard time this year. For some, it's harder. Check in with folks and do it often. And I think it's something, not even I think, I know it's something with this whole pandemic and what it's done to, like, all of us that is just really heightening everything right now. And we're seeing it play out in all of these different ways. You know, and some of them have been things that have been a long time coming, such as they're addressing racial justice in this country and inequality and those things. That has been something that has been, fortunately, but unfortunately, right, a long time coming, right? Like, we need to have this discussion, and we're going to have it now. And something about the pandemic has really just escalated all of that. And, you know, now it's mental health. last week on the show we talked about, and unfortunately we're going to talk about again on tonight's show in a little bit because it hasn't stopped, is the game industry having to address some of its own problems with people in power and people needing to be removed from power as a result. Like, this is just, it's a hell of a decade, but I think as many would say, you know, whereas some of this is extremely tragic, such as the loss from COVID that is unnecessary, such as the loss of our friends dealing with mental health issues that are only heightened by this whole situation that's going on with quarantine. But then there's also that side of it that, you know what, finally, we're having discussion on racial injustice and equality. Finally, some of these abusers and people in power that need to be taken out of power, we're finally talking about that. So there's a little bit of, there's a little bit of nice and a little bit of not so nice, you know, or I shouldn't say nice. Like, I'm really struggling with the correct words tonight. Please forgive me. I'm human. A lot of, I would say, like things that will be long-term positive coming out of this, and things that are immediately very negative. So anyhow, Fat Ninja DM in chat says, e-hugs for all who need it. Yes, please hand them out. Rick and Elite says, yes, depression is horrible. Been going through it for years and thought drinking would solve the problem, but made it worse finding a good support group and a good community to guide you to the right path and keep you positive and strong. Always a help. I hope that's you saying you've found sobriety, and congratulations to you if that is the case, and stick with it. And there's a lot of people out there that will help you through it, and finding the right group for that is, yes, a big part of that for sure. Okay. Whew. Heavy topics tonight. And now we've got one more, right, Loki?
Yeah, we're going to have a nice light topic about, you know, abuse allegations coming out of Evo.
I can't even laugh. It's not funny. Like, it's just, it just.
No, it's just not. So, yes, apparently there's been allegations of sexual misconduct from about their previous CEO, Joey Mr. Wizard Seller. And so these were made.
Not to be confused. And I'm not kidding. I want to be clear, not to be confused with the Mr. Wizard that was on television in the 80s. Okay. Because when I hear Mr. Wizard, there will be no other Mr. Wizard than Don Herbert. Okay. In my opinion, even if he probably didn't like having to do that show with children, but it doesn't matter. He taught me a lot about science when I was growing up. He taught a lot of people on Nickelodeon. I just want to make sure we're all very clear. Not that Mr. Wizard. Okay. But somebody who dared to take that name, who dared to take. Anyway, continue, yes. Logan.
So apparently this was made after one of the veteran competitors, Mikey Crackprawn Fam, who accused Joey Seller of preying on teenage boys at Southern Hills Golfland, which was where they had a lot of these different meetups for some of the fighting game tournaments in Southern California.
I've been to Southern Hills. It was a big music game meetup back in the day too. You've probably been too, right? Southern Hills?
Not to that one. I've been to.
They closed it earlier than a lot of the others. But I've been to Southern Hills Golfland, which is no longer there. It's condos now, I think.
Don't think I've been to that one, but no, there's been other ones, but yeah, not that particular one. But apparently, he described multiple instances taking place in the early 2000s where he used the gifts of arcade tokens to bribe teenage boys to do, you know, inappropriate things. And
leave it at that. Yep.
Yes. We'll just leave it at that. So during that, of course, after that, you know, these allegations were made, basically it just kind of was a chain of events. So you had starting off with, a bunch of participants dropping out of Evo Online, so including Sonic Fox, SKD, Yohosi, Lord Knight, and Sejam were all dropping out of it. And then once you had the big competitors dropping out, then following suit, you had the actual companies dropping out. So starting, you had them fighting herds, pulling out.
Everybody wanted to distance themselves from a pedophile. Can we say we're surprised? No.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, everybody, all of the big game companies pulled their games out of there because they don't want to, you know, they're standing in solidarity. They don't want to be involved with that. And of course,
I would have ran away too. I don't blame a single person or company.
With all the games and all the competitors gone, they had to cancel Evo Online this year. So with that, they're going to be donating the equivalent of the proceeds promised to Project Hope. They've also established a new CEO, Tony Cannon, who is, I think he was the previous CEO or his co-sponsor or something like that. He's going to be taking the leadership role. And then the other guy is, of course, not involved with Evo Online at all in any capacity. So it's been a crazy week.
Tiger Claw in chat says, I honestly don't understand what drives these people to prey on underage children, et cetera, et cetera. Tiger Claw, like, good. You shouldn't understand that. And I think that's what makes all of this so shocking, is that any reasonable person is not going to say, well, that makes sense, which is interesting, because I have, you know, and when we talk about the whole, like, cancel culture and all this, and how long do we give somebody, like, this isn't somebody's opinion, okay? This is somebody's actions that he's, you know, and I've seen the very interesting Twitter takes of, it's been 20 years type of thing, but it's like, hold on. I know y'all hate my obsession with Drag Race, but there was a queen on it. I think it's in the preview for next week. I think it was Alexis. Sorry if I'm misattributing it. Who says a quote, and that is, what is in the darkness will always come to light. Might be paraphrasing a little bit there. But that's the point, is that he's paying for it now because he didn't pay for it 20 years ago. Look at that guy here in our area, the Golden State Killer. Maybe not everybody out there has heard of it, but you know, Loki, you want to talk about, right? That guy who lived in my neighborhood when I was a child, apparently, who had killed a bunch of people in the 70s. I don't know. I'm not all up on the serial killer stuff like some of my friends, but he had killed a bunch of people and so forth. He was just recently arrested. Now, granted, he probably hasn't killed anybody in like 30 years since the 80s or whatever, but he was recently arrested, and they had to have the trial at Sacramento State because the only place where everybody could socially distance and all this stuff. And he, you know, is going to jail, pled guilty, and he's 80 now, and he'll be behind bars forever. The reason why I bring that up, well, do we just let him go because it's been 30 years?
No. Of course not.
No, we don't.
Now, so, they probably, I don't know what the statute of limitations on some of the stuff is, but
doesn't matter. For this, doesn't matter. There are none. Maybe it can't actually be tried in a court, because I get what you're going with that, Loki. Like, it probably can't actually be tried in a court because of statute of limitations. But in this particular court of, you know, people that want to associate and do business and give this person power, everybody's having a moment of reckoning saying, whoa, you don't deserve power. And that's that.
Yeah.
So, one of my serial killer friend experts just joined chat. What a great time to speak up. So isn't chat saying I'm obsessed with this guy? Yes, 70s and 80s, also known as the East Area Rapist, original Night Stalker, blah, all these nasty things. But I mean, surely you also agree with my point I was making. Just because he's 80 years old and it all happened 30 years ago, that doesn't suddenly make the issue go away. And it's the same with this individual, and this person is being unceremoniously removed from the gaming industry.
And how do we know
wasn't
still doing it? Like, I don't think it was just like, oh yeah, and then he stopped because he grew out of it. I mean, like, I'm sorry. We don't know.
Yeah.
So let them investigate.
So I imagine EVO will come back next year with new people at the helm and so forth, and COVID won't be, hopefully, knock on wood, an issue next year, and things can attain somewhat a sense of normalcy. But I mean, this is the purge that's happening in the gaming industry right now.
Yeah.
And just like I said a moment ago, something about this year, it's dragging it all out. So those of you still hiding in the dark, look out. All right. Anyhow, let's move on, shall we?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. What do you have for us next, Logie?
So let's talk a little bit about greed and the game industry.
Ooh, I'm so sorry, Loki. I have to reiterate this point in chat because I think it's so good and a nice little like uplifting, hopeful thing to end on. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, "Teach your kids not to be a creep." And yes, that part. It is, you know, maybe our generation is really screwed up. But the best thing we could do is teach the next generation how to not make the same mistakes. And I think that's a nice, like, what can I do to help the next generation not have to deal with it? Anyway, okay, sorry. I just thought that was a very good note to end it on. Loki, continue.
So it's been found out that apparently that the next NBA 2K game, NBA 2K21 on next-gen consoles, is going to be more expensive than your typical game. So they're going to be charging $70 for the brand new game coming out. They're basically trying to... A PR spokesman for Take-Two said that, "We believe our suggested retail price for NBA 2K21 on next-generation platforms fairly represents the value of what's being offered. Power, speed, technology, and that's only possible on our new hardware." So right now... The suggested retail price is $69. I think it's more testing the waters to see if they can get that. And, you know, I know that I've seen a lot of folks compare this to, well, hey, you know, when I was buying like Super Nintendo games and stuff like that, they were like $79, $89, $90, or older games like on cartridges were more expensive.
Right, because they were on cartridges, and you were paying for all the chips inside of them. That's why Neo Geo games are so fucking expensive, because those games were gigantic. You're paying for all those chips.
That may be true in a sense, but let's just not be confused here. The games you're buying nowadays, you're not paying $60 for them. Sure, $60 may be the price to purchase the disc or purchase the initial download, but then there's the season passes. There's all the microtransactions in there. There's all the DLC that they're adding in there. And I get it that a lot of it is additional content, but there's also a lot of content that is normally included in these games. And you can't tell me that they're not planning to put this stuff out. A lot of these games that you'll have features that were in a previous version of the game, and then they're separating it and selling it to you piecemeal in the, you know, later versions that come out. And NBA 2K, the game that last year was just blatantly, they have like gambling loot boxes in these things. You can't tell me that they're not going to be making, and they've already said they make billions of dollars on these loot boxes. Why is it that they need an additional $10 to put this game out? They don't need it. They make tons of money on it, and I get it. Additional development costs because of higher fidelity graphics and sound and whatever. They're still making tons of money off of those microtransactions, and they don't need the additional money. But it's an excuse to try to raise those prices so that they can get more money, because why not get more money if you can? So I think we're going to see some folks, some companies try to do this, and I think if there's not a huge backlash to it, you're going to see a lot of other companies start to follow suit, because that's what they did with the Xbox 360 in that generation. And they're like, well, you know, these games, they have better graphics, and so it's going to take a lot more manpower to put these games out, and that's why we need to charge more money. It's an excuse.
I have some similarities to what you're saying, Loki, but I find that I'm comfortable with the idea of a $70 price tag for the AAA game, for the high end, premier showcase games. I think things have become so warped since the cartridge era, because in the cartridge era, a $9.99 game was practically unheard of, unless it was like, you know, on sale 1,000 times over, or some type of like corporate trash or something. Like a $10 game, what, Sneak King was like a $10 game on the Xbox 360. But those games were like few and far between, right? My point is that, number one, games really aren't all one price anymore. Games are on this sliding scale. And what a company really has to figure out is, what is my game worth? Right? Because, like, for example, I mentioned Alan's playing Dark Souls again on the Switch. And the first thing I said is, I said, so you paid $60 to play Dark Souls again? He's like, no, it's only like 30 or 40. And I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Like, I get it. Like, I guarantee you that the excuse may be, like, they're going to have all sorts of excuses that they use. It's going to be that, oh, we need more money for server costs. We need more money for development and stuff like that. But I guarantee you, when you look at the actual employees that they're hiring and who they're keeping and how much they're paying them, that is not going up at all. If anything, the money is going to the CEO.
To some extent, I would permit the additional develop cost when it comes to, you know, making 4K graphics and doing everything that comes into a AAA experience and so forth. I'm not dismissing your points, Loki, because I do think they're valid. And especially when you talk about, like, the loot boxes on top of that and everything else, I think that is really up to us what we have to evaluate as buyers. And companies do need to be upfront with this. The ESRB needs to require them to be upfront with this, which, good news, they do now, because we have that whole, you know, what do they end up calling
it? Well, they have ways to get around it, though. They have ways. I mean, look at perfect example. Not Take-Two that did it this time, but it was Activision. So Activision, they printed their copies of Crash Bandicoot, the remake that they did. And they did not have loot boxes on there. So on the packaging, it doesn't have to say that there's loot boxes. They added it. They patched it in later on. It updated on the ESRB website. But I don't think they have to reprint any of their packaging that said that there's no loot boxes in there. So they have ways to get around it. They purposefully patch that stuff in later so it doesn't get caught in the early reviews that go out. So because people try to stay away from that stuff.
They know
that they're doing.
We as gamers are kind of getting smarter to those type of tactics too, and kind of have our ways to deal with that. And I kind of think that's all going to, like, work out in the end. My point is, I feel like a Final Fantasy 16 or something, if they charge me $70 for it, I'm probably going to pay it. We've been saying and have said on this show before, you know what? I would rather, instead of you having all these loot boxes and all these other ways to nickel and dime people, just charge $70 for the game and give me the game you want to make. And I'm willing to stand by that earlier comment and pay $70 for the game if it's a well-rounded game.
So here's another thing, and this didn't make our show roll, but I did want to bring it up.
Sure.
So earlier this week, the House of Lords actually ruled in the UK that loot boxes are gambling and should be regulated as such. So in the UK, that's how they're seeing these now. And they're basically saying that because of the way that they're being monetized and the way that they're being marketed, and it's basically gambling, and they have to be regulated as such. So I think that maybe they can see the writing on the wall, and that their gravy train of loot boxes is kind of going away. And so maybe this is why they think that they need to raise the price of the games, because they're not going to be able to do that. In which case, I'm fine with that, as long as I don't have to have my game, like, rebalanced because they're trying to sell me a bunch of garbage I don't want to necessarily buy. And there are lots of games that they build and rebalance based on that, to make it more grindier, to, you know, stretch out the experience. There was that Lord of the Rings game that they had not too long ago that they completely had to rebalance the whole game after they had patched those out, because it was just such a grind fest. I want to say even maybe some of the Forza games and stuff had a little bit grindier aspects to them because they were selling their in-game currency for that as well. But there's a lot of games that they model based on that to make them more grindier so that you buy these loot boxes. And it's a big business for them.
Pod Culture's brought up a good point in chat. And this thought crossed my mind too. Pod Culture says at twitch.tv/VOGNetwork, make physical 70 and keep digital 60. You know, that thought's crossed my mind too, is, you know, I feel like the game industry, for many people, the industry would love nothing more than to lose the physical thing completely and go completely digital. And there are many games that are completely digital. I mean, that's pretty much how the indie stuff thrives, unless you're lucky enough to get one of those limited run game things. But not every game gets that. Like, almost everything indie is digital, and it's working out fine. And I almost feel like the industry would really prefer things to go that way. You kind of with some of the Xbox One stuff that they had to backtrack, right? So
yeah, but do we know how much of how much? Because I don't know the numbers off the top of my head of what's digital versus what is being sold physical out there. granted, I know that they would like to see it go more digital because that's more money in their pocket. But I think retailers like GameStop, a lot of these big box stores, mm-hmm. Walmart, you know, retailers online, I don't think that they have any interest in that going to an all digital format. And considering that they don't,
but the writing's been on the wall for them for a long time, and they all know it's coming. But look at
big players. They drive what these industries do because they have such pull with that. That's why that they can do the things that they do. I just have a thing because who's selling these systems for them? They have to rely on these retailers to make money. And if they're going to, you know, screw them out of like sales because they're charging more retail, I mean, that's just a suggested retail price. They don't have to necessarily sell it for that price. They can always sell it lower, but I don't see them doing that. I see them, they'd have to be parity across all formats, you know, just because it would be confusing for one. And for the second one is that they don't want to burn those bridges with these partners because they still need the function of selling. They can't sell them direct right now. I mean, they could try selling these systems direct, but they need them, unfortunately.
I can actually see that, and I get that. I think this is already happening, though, and will continue to happen, is that the game comes out, everything is in parity, da-da-da, just like you said, but then 6 weeks later, here comes the first sale, and the digital version is marked off 20%.
So here's where I think they're going to have trouble. With a $70 price point, let's say that they do raise at the same price dollars, and not everybody's on board with jumping into that price. I think that the scrutiny on those games is going to be much higher because if you have everything at $60 and NBA 2K21 comes out at $70 and NBA 2K21 ends up being like WWE 2K20, where it's just a piece of garbage that's all like rushed and buggy as hell, that is going to come down really hard on them.
True.
And so I caution them doing something like that, but they don't learn. Who cares? They're just going to do whatever they're going to do.
All right. Well, for time's sake, I'm going to move on to the next story, but I do think this is a conversation that's going to definitely come up again. If, you know, again, we're going off a little bit of speculation here. I mean, there does seem to be some proof in the pudding and so forth. But, you know, if we have to continue this, games face that reality, that games the next generation are going to be $70 for the high end stuff. We'll continue that conversation later on. Just everybody kind of has to start thinking that this is a possibility.
Sorry, one last thought real quick. And I just wanted to put out there. So another thing with the $70 price point games is that you're also not just competing against other games out there, but you're competing against services like Games Pass, where I'm going to be getting all of like the AAA games that are coming out from Microsoft and all these other game studios for like $10 a month. So,
and truthfully, Loki, I think that's where it's all headed. Like, Nintendo will get away without doing it because they can always be last to the party and somehow still be fine. But I kind of feel like Game Pass, like that's where the movie industry's ended up. Everybody's got their own streaming service and monthly service. That's where the games industry is going to end up too. Just give it a little more time.
Yeah.
All right. Anyhow, moving on and talking about a new offering from one of these companies that has their own service, although this is outside of that. Ubisoft has recently put out their own Battle Royale game, or at least it's in testing. You can kind of see it on Twitch right now, some streams for Hyperscape. It is a Battle Royale, but it's a little more futuristic and first-person take on the genre. I was watching a streamer play it earlier because right now, like, if you watch a streamer play it, you have the potential to get the drop so you can play the beta as well. I only watched for a little bit, but I was just kind of curious what the game was. But it's definitely got like that more, it kind of almost like looks like Watch Dogs in a way, not totally, but like has that futuristic kind of look to it. But they've got things like low gravity and people are like jumping super high and like, you know, kind of maybe it's almost a little bit like Crackdown in that regard. Might be up your alley, Loki. It was interesting, you know, kind of a different type of battle royale. You can play solo or in teams of three. I think the guy I was watching was playing in teams of three, and there can be up to 100 players in each match. You can revive teammates by if you're taking out another player, a respawn beacon appears. This is already baked into the game already. Also, what's interesting about this, it also kind of integrates with Twitch. So you can actually vote. Your Twitch fans can kind of like vote on what twist would be on the upcoming map, and so forth. There is a Crown Cast extension available on Twitch, and you get to impact the game in different ways by helping to vote for the next event, granting infinite ammo, revealing player locations. So that's kind of interesting. The technical test is running through July 7th, so by the time a lot of you hear this on the podcast, it may already be over. But I believe the full launch of the game, I thought I heard on the stream today they were saying the 12th. Although that's not in the article I'm looking at now, but the full game will come out a little bit later. So kind of neat. Another battle royale contender, but this one is doing that interesting thing of doing the Twitch giveaways to kind of build the hype for it. And it is Ubisoft, which is a pretty big player out there, and so on and so on. So it'll be interesting to see what develops there. So, all right, let's move on. Loki.
All right. And so we've got some more news about Ubisoft, unfortunately. So they're going to be shaking up their editorial group, which right now is all white males. And now, of course, they, you know, being that the focus on all of these different companies is diversity and inclusiveness, that they're going to be changing that, of course, to make it more inclusive. So it says, the situation that some of you have experienced or witnessed are absolutely not acceptable. No one should feel harassed or disrespected at work. And the types of inappropriate behavior we have recently learned about cannot and will not be tolerated. And this is coming from the CEO, Yves Guillemot. They sent an email to all of his employees in... specifically says, I've decided to revise the composition of the editorial department, transforming our human resources process and improving the accountability of all managers on these subjects. So it's interesting that they're doing this to kind of combat some of the harassment in the workplace. I don't remember necessarily the allegations here, but I do remember Ubisoft coming being brought up.
I was going to say, I think somebody at Ubisoft has been implicated in a lot of this, and this might be Ubisoft's long-term response to making sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, so...
I mean, if we're going to say, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago on the show when we were, you know, discussing a lot of these issues, if we're going to say that everybody games, and that's something we, you know, I think we all agree, games are for everybody. Everybody is welcome to play video games. You have to have game makers, and I don't necessarily literally mean that. Well, I do actually literally mean them, and my long-term goal, the people that are on the board of directors and so forth, the people that are the financial side of that, needs to also reflect everybody is welcome to play video games and not just one type of stereotype that has been that for years and years.
Just run a business without harassing their employees.
That would be great, but it might take this position, and maybe we have to shake up and challenge the position of power, the positions of power, so that there isn't a structure set up in place that can incubate that anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I'm not saying this of Ubisoft, but in a lot of places and culture and so forth, the boys club, right? We've got to break that shit up, and the way you break up the boys club is you bring in some women. And so on, and et cetera, and you know, diversify things a little bit. So I think this will be a great long-term thing for Ubisoft.
Yeah, hopefully.
It's also...
Hopefully it stops them from harassing people.
It's also nice to see that there's a little more thought and action beyond so-and-so fucked up, can him. You know, there's a little more...
Well, there was people left. Let go. So there was a guy resigned,
but
there's
more.
Yeah,
there's more than that. There's how are we going to make sure it doesn't happen again? And I think that's, you know, the happy news here is that Ubisoft is taking steps to how can we prevent this from happening again.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Let's get to our next story, which is sure to be buggy, right, Loki?
Yes. So I've been trying to think about how they could possibly release a buggy TV show, but I'm sure if there's someone that's going to figure it out, it's going to be Bethesda. And Bethesda has announced that they're going to be doing a Fallout TV show. So they are, it's being produced by the creators behind Westworld, and they didn't really, it's supposed to be like, I guess it looks like it's an Amazon original. No word on necessarily what it's going to be. I mean, I hope it's going to be about Fallout, but like, I don't know what necessarily the story is going to be about. It's being created by Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan. And of course, those are the folks that were behind Westworld. And that's all we know right now. No release date's been given, but they did like a little teaser that kind of teased this whole thing coming out. I hope it's better than their last game that they put out. I mean,
I'm sure it's completely different. It's completely different creative minds to make a TV show, and that can
Westworld's great. So, yeah. Like, I mean, I have hopes that it'll be all right. And the Fallout universe is definitely pretty vast, and there's a lot of like stories that you could come up with. So I could see where it could be pretty cool.
Yeah,
and I hope it is.
Video games have kind of been winning in the TV show department too in the past year or so, between like the success of The Witcher, although obviously The Witcher was books too. But then the Castlevania anime.
Oh, that's right. They're doing. I thought they're doing a The Last of Us show that HBO's doing. That I think.
Yeah,
right?
I think that's a thing too.
Was someone picking up Silent Hill or something? Or maybe I'm thinking of it wrong.
I think there's rumors about a Silent Hill movie, but there's also rumors about a Silent Hill game. And anytime you have a beloved franchise like Silent Hill, there's rumors that are following. But I don't think we have anything official in that universe yet. Fingers and toes crossed.
That movie that's not quite Five Nights at Freddy's movie, but it's a Five Nights at Freddy's inspired movie starring Nicolas Cage. I'm sold. So count me in.
It also kind of feels like nobody's making movies now, you know. So it's interesting that this show gets announced, but it's like, well, they're not going to really be able to film it anytime soon. But there's also a lot that goes into a TV show before it gets filmed. They're going to have to cast it. They're going to have to write it. They're going to have to, you know, do scout the locations and so forth. So there's a lot of steps that are going to be taken before they get to actually shooting it anyway. Just hopefully COVID's got all of Hollywood on, you know, frozen right now. Like, if it can't be done over Zoom, they're not doing it.
Well, that's fine. After 2020, you know, there'll be a literal wasteland, so they just won't have to.
It's going to be similar. It's going to be similar to the writer's strike. You know, once COVID's over, you can expect things like Big Brother on CBS is going to fill up a lot of time in the immediate. That the reality TV is going to boom again because those shows are quick and easy to make. You'll probably see some imported shows because it's all the same things that happened during the writer's strike. But we'll see. You know, again, we don't want COVID to keep on going and so forth. And who knows how long it's going to be at this point. But it just feels like the film industry is not going to get back to work before. Even though I guess technically the film industry opened, but I don't think anyone is actually doing anything because, oh, yes, the unions don't approve it. That's what's happening because COVID's back on the rise. And L.A. is one of the huge places for that. And even other places that they would consider shooting, it's on the rise everywhere. And then other places, like other places, don't want them. Like, they can't film Survivor in Fiji right now because Fiji doesn't want them. So it's gonna take some time before this all sorts itself out. And hopefully, knock on wood, we have a vaccine or effective treatment. And then we can talk about when those things are going to film again, which would include this show. But my long way of getting to this point, don't expect to see a single frame of this show until like 2022, right?
Yeah, it'll be a while.
Interesting.
It'll go by super fast, so just like this year.
Bobby Blackwell says the new Jurassic World movie is back on set in the UK. Really? I didn't realize they were shooting again, but I guess the UK is loosened a lot of restrictions as well, and I imagine if people quarantined for a little bit or whatever, they're probably able to do it. Bobby says you'll start seeing shows like The Floor is Lava. Exactly.
I did watch that.
Did you? I haven't watched it.
I watched the first episode of that, or like part of the first episode of that, because it wasn't very good. It's just it's frustrating, the drama that they try to instill in that show, and also it's like I don't know. Like, it'd be better with kids doing it because, you know, it's totally like something like the island, or was it the Legend of the Secret Temple or whatever. I don't know. It's silly. It's a silly show.
Orange Right in chat says more game shows. Hey, if that means one of the first things back on air is going to be that new Supermarket Sweep, I'm down. Bring on game shows. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Don't threaten me with a good time. So.
Yeah.
All right. Anyhow.
Bring back 1 versus 100.
Yeah, on Xbox? Absolutely. All right.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Speaking of things that we watch, let's talk about Nintendo and some of the things Nintendo has us watch. So Nintendo is talking about the Nintendo Directs. There was recently, of course, like a mini Direct, but we never got anything that would be like an E3 Mondo supersized Direct type of thing. So what in the heck is going on? Well, recently, Shintaro Furukawa was speaking to investors and was talking about that directs still feel like an incredibly effective way to present information. But in a somewhat vague statement, Shintaro Furukawa went on to say, inversely, times change, and so does the most effective way to promote products. So there is a chance that a new, better way to present this information comes about. So we always like to examine all of the possible ways to communicate this information to customers. So maybe they would do something that's not just a direct? Would we see more bite-sized type of announcements like what happened with the Mario? And we see more types of social media, the Paper Mario game that was recently revealed. And will we see more types of those social media reveals? I don't know.
That's not unique. I released a trailer. I mean, like, you're not cutting edge, Nintendo. You're not trying anything that everybody else hasn't already done. Ooh, you released a trailer on Twitter. Ooh, bravo for thinking inside the box. Like, I don't understand how that's any different than what everybody else is doing. And honestly, the directs were kind of a unique thing. Now everybody's kind of copied that and stuff. I can't really think what else they could possibly do that would be kind of different, but like if that's the move that they're going to do, is like we're just going to do what everybody else is doing. I mean, I guess it's worked for everybody else. They're doing what you're doing, so
I feel like Nintendo can really do whatever the fuck they want. Like every podcaster, every Twitch streamer out there that has ever said anything critical about Nintendo, like it's just Nintendo just goes, huh, and does their own thing. And it almost always, exception Wii U, it almost always, it doesn't matter what any of these criticisms out. It doesn't matter that Nintendo's online is shitty. You know why? Because they have Animal Crossing. And it doesn't matter that you have to talk to the dodos like through 5,000 lines of text just to visit somebody else's island because it's Nintendo and it's Animal Crossing. Who cares? Like, Nintendo just gets away with it every time. Unless it's the Wii U.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just I really don't care what I just want more news. Like I would like to know what they're working on. Mm-hmm. And right now, like all I know is like, oh hey, there's a game that's coming out soon.
Well, there's a Metroid Prime 4 that they restarted, so Lord knows where that is right now.
Time to port some of those old Wii U game or hell, Wii games.
I was going to say, I think they've almost ported everything from the Wii U over that was worth porting.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Wii, there's still the Wii. I mean, after all, I mean, it's
Metroid Prime Trilogy, right?
I mean, the Switch is pretty much an NVIDIA Shield. All right. So why not?
All right, let's move on to a simpler time when there was no portability in the games like this. It's the classic game of the week. And every week, Dark Sakura steps into the gaming vault and finds a game that she thinks, hey, you brats should be checking this game out this week. It's time to dust this old school game off and give it a go. This week, since Dark Sakura is not here, I have taken on the responsibility of choosing a classic game of the week. And I decided to pick something that is a little bit topical because it's a game that came up casually in discussion a couple weeks ago when, again, we were talking about these Namco collections that are coming out. And in the second collection, there's quite the variety of different Namco games, but then there's also a game in there where I'm like, I don't remember Namco ever being involved with this game, but that's because Broderbund published it here in the U.S. Namcot published it on the Famicom, and it's a game called Legacy of the Wizard, and that is my classic game choice for tonight. So Legacy of the Wizard is actually a U.S. or localized version of Dragon Slayer 4, Dracy Family. Now, the Dragon Slayer series is pretty big in Japan, and gave us a lot of different types of games. Like, obviously, there were games that came out on the TurboGrafx, which were probably well-known. There was also a game called Xanadu that was the second game in the Dragon Slayer series. And there was a spin-off to Xanadu that was Fa-Xanadu or Fa-Xanadu, Fa-Xanadu. That game we ended up getting on the NES. So it's interesting how this series kind of came and went and so forth through the different... in America, we kind of got one here, one there, but we never really got the entire series. Anyhow, so this is the one that I picked for tonight, Legacy of the Wizard, which was, again, Dragon Slayer 4, when it was originally released, not just on the Famicom, but on the MSX and the MSX2. But I've picked the version that I remember on the Nintendo Entertainment System, where it's called Legacy of the Wizard. In this game, it's actually an early example of a Metroidvania game. It really is. Now, maybe that's because Metroid was also a game on the NES, and one could argue Metroid was a Metroidvania game. I would say it also has a lot in common with Goonies 2. For some reason, that's a lot of the vibe I get from this game, except you don't really have so much the parts where you're doing the indoor puzzles that were really infuriating in the old game. You do have indoor areas like inns and shops, but it's a little bit different. But I don't know why, but the overworld kind of reminded me of Goonies 2 a little bit, and just the fact that, you know, you had these big sprawling maps that you went through. So anyway, in the game, you are trying to destroy an ancient dragon. The dragon's name is Kila, and Kila is trapped in a painting. And so you'll actually, I don't know how long we'll let this footage that we're playing on Twitch go, but after about 7 minutes or so, you actually see our character get to where Kila's at. It's a big painting in the ground. And to get to the painting, or to unleash the dragon, you have to find the Dragon Slayer, which is a magical sword. There are four crowns protecting the sword. So there are essentially five family members that you play as. There's also a grandma and a grandpa who are like the password system. But you also play as dad, mom, sister, brother, and pet. Little, and it's not like a dog or a cat. It's a little pink puff thing that you play as. So you use all five of those characters to essentially explore different parts of the underground. So on the Twitch video right now, we're looking at the dad character being played here. So the dad, I think, has like strength, basically, and is able to use a glove in a little bit that he's going to find here that will allow him to move bricks around. Okay. And the bricks are, you know, one area of the map has a bunch of bricks. It's a brick puzzle, so you need to use him to get through that part. And then later on, the mother is has some weaker attributes, but she can use some really strong magic stuff. And so she gets a magical item you have to use to get to one of the crowns. And then I think the sister like does like fireballs or something, and the pet is really strong, but doesn't have a big range for their weapons. So they all have like kind of like their pluses and negatives, right? It's kind of like Mario Brothers 2 in that regard. But you have to use certain characters to get past certain parts. And a lot of that is just trial and error to figure out what to do. Or you do what a lot of people did and you just read a guide online. In fact, I remember as a kid, one of the letters I wrote to Nintendo Power Magazine was about this game. And they did answer the question in Nintendo Power Magazine. Now, I'm not saying it was my letter, because I'm going to say there were probably hundreds of kids that got frustrated by this fucking game. But it was enough of us writing Nintendo where they did actually answer some of the questions about how do I find the crowns, or how do I make any goddamn progress in this game? I mean, I don't think I phrased it that way, but it's essentially what I was asking. How do I do literally anything in this game? And they answered that in an episode, issue of Nintendo Power at one point. So, eventually you get all four crowns by using each family member except the brother type. And the brother is the one that can actually wield the sword, who goes to slay the dragon. And ta-da, you slay the dragon. That's why you played a game called Dragon Slayer. So there it is. Anyway, This game was first released for the MSX2. It came out July 10th, 1987. Sometimes, and the wiki article I'm looking at on this says that it's sometimes misattributed to a quintet production due to a reference in the ending credits. But Yuzo Koshiro, who is the composer, that's why the music's so fucking good in this game, confirmed that this is a coincidence. And quintet actually didn't exist until 1989 anyway. It was ported to the Famicom just a week later, July 17th, 1987. And then there was a Famicom, I guess the ending credits of the version showed that the Famicom port was developed internally by Nihon Falcom, but apparently Compile somehow contributed this as well. It was published in Japan by Namco and then, of course, released 2 years later in 1989 by Broderbund on the NES as, of course, Legacy of the Wizard that we're looking at here. There was another version of this game years and years later. In 2008, a version of this game came out for mobile phones in Japan. So there it is. There it is, your classic game of the week, Legacy of the Wizard. And my parents bought me this game for one Christmas. It was probably Christmas of 89 when it came out. Because my mom knew I liked the Dungeons and Fantasy Slayer type of games. And she said, when I looked at the box, it looked like something you'd like. And she was right. I was into it, even though it was an annoyingly hard game. And I think I ended up using passwords online or in magazines or however we did it back then to just skip my way straight to the final boss and do it that way. So, did you ever play this game, Loki?
No, I have never played that game.
Never played this game? It's a good game. It's you know, again, you have to remember, this is on the NES, and it's a huge map. And, you know, again, I know we overuse the term Metroidvania sometimes, but those games were pretty few and far between on the NES, unless you were literally Metroid or Castlevania 2, which was kind of the Metroidvania-esque game on the NES. So games like this were really fun to discover, so... looking at some comments in chat about this game, SSGO100Matt says, I game genie this game for sure. She-Hulk 10 with the Broderbund reference says, Print Shop was a great software package that they made as well. That is where most people probably remember Broderbund. I would say the Print Shop was a huge one. And then the other huge, huge game that they put out, they had an NES version, but it was also on many types of home computer systems, was Load Runner, L-O-D-E Runner. That was a big Broderbund game, too, back in the day. And, you know what else Compile had a hand in that Broderbund published in the U.S.? You know what other game that was? That's right, the Guardian fucking Legend. So when I heard this game came out in the Namco collection, I had a moment of... I had that gay gasp, okay? I had the, could this mean that we could get the Guardian Legend released in a collection? Well, Namco actually published this game in Japan, so that's where I think we're able to see it here. But they did release the same collection in the U.S. They were able to do that, so I don't know. Maybe... some other Broderbund memories in chats. Hype Mayhem says, I think Broderbund put out Raid on Bungling Bay, too. That is correct. They did that as well. And Questmaster says, Broderbund also came out with everybody's favorite question, where in the world is Carmen Sandiego? Very good call out. That was also a Broderbund. Broderbund definitely no longer in the business of publishing games, though. I kind of always saw Broderbund more as a, like... utility company because of things like Print Shop and I guess edutainment, like Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, but you know, they kind of got their hands in a little bit with the NES stuff, but I don't think any of their games were huge runaway successes on console. I think Load Runner and Carmen Sandiego, those games were always kind of more personal computer based games, so Broderbund was much more known in that space. So oh, wow. I'm forgetting all these greats. The original Prince of Persia was Broderbund and Myst. I didn't know that. I didn't remember Myst being a Broderbund game. That's a great call out there. So, huh. Wow. Let's see. Looking at, I just wanted to see real quick because I'm looking at, before we get back into news, I want to see. I think Compile just released the Guardian Legends themselves in Japan. No, IREM did. IREM released it in Japan, so sadly it wasn't Namco. But Nintendo themselves released it in Europe, so anything is possible. Just game industry, I'm asking for one simple thing. The Guardian Legend. Bring it back. Let's give that game the love it deserves. That's all I want. All right. Anyhow, let's move on. We have more gaming news to get to before we get to your questions and so forth in chat a little later in the show and your emails. I actually don't know if we have any tonight, but we'll look. Let's get to it. Loki, rapid fire news.
Yes. Okay. Let's see. So let's talk a little bit about NBA 2K again. So NBA 2K20 and Rise of the Tomb Raider are going to be your free games that you get for PlayStation Plus in the month of July. Also, they're going to be giving away a game called Erica as well. It's the bonus game because apparently it's PlayStation Plus, their 10th anniversary. Hooray!
Okay. I mean, I ain't one to complain about an additional game getting thrown in.
Yeah. So that's cool. And then speaking of games that were on PlayStation, Horizon Zero Dawn is going to be coming to the PC on Steam and Epic Games Store on August 7th. That'll be pretty cool. I wonder if I'll have to get this again, but they're going to be, it's going to be bundled with the Frozen Wild expansion as well. So pretty cool. I am curious to see how this looks on PC. I'm sure. And all the cool mods that they're going to have
yeah.
for it. Sure.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is I'm like, I don't know if I can really justify spending the money again on PC when I already have it on PlayStation 4. I'm sure it's going to look great on PC. But you said the magic word there, mods. And I bet Alan will probably, because he loves to mod games, if there's some good mods for that that come out, I imagine he's probably going to pick that up at some point. So I'm very curious to see how the modding community wrecks that game, but in a good way.
All right. Yeah, and they've got like improved reflections, and they're going to have dynamic foliage, and I don't know, it looks pretty cool based on the trailer. It looks like a shiny coat of paint on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Sony-based things, Sony PlayStation is the latest company to jump on with a boycott of ads on Facebook and Instagram. This according to a report by GamesIndustry.biz. There's a lot of companies that have stopped advertising on Facebook recently. PlayStation is jumping on that as well. This is also an excuse for me to do that cheap plug that I finally pulled the plug. So y'all know I went on a rant last week on Facebook games, right? So I finally put my money where my mouth is, so to speak. I deactivated my Facebook on Thursday, Friday, I don't remember. And so I'm detoxing from Facebook right now. And again, it's my choice, and I'm not saying I'm any better or worse, and or anybody has to feel like they need to do the same thing. Because to be fair, I am still using Messenger and a little bit of Instagram, because I can't pull away from Messenger yet, because it's how I actually get some gigs that are completely outside this whole video game thing that I do. So I kind of can't pull myself. But even just pulling myself off of Facebook, those are less ads that can be served to me there. So, and I find, just out of muscle memory, Loki, do you know how many times I just instinctively am putting like Facebook.com in my phone or on my desktop? Just like, and I'm greeted with the login screen and I have to go, oh yeah, I deleted that, or I just deactivated that. So, anyway. Bobby says, this means I control the VOG Network fan page exclusively. Yeah, pretty much. Understand. And Bobby says, wish I could do the same. I just unfriended a bunch of toxic people on both sides of the spectrum. Yeah, it is out of control on Facebook. I'm not even talking about like friends and stuff, although there's a lot of friends that are just going crazy. But it's just that it's Facebook culture. I think that's the only way I can put it. It's Facebook culture and the things that happen on public pages and stuff too, and things that Facebook has no interest in trying to control or what. And I'm just like, you know what? I don't want to participate anymore. I'm going to take myself out of this. And so I have. So we'll see. Some people are like, oh, you're only going to be able to make it last a couple months. We'll see. Spite is very fucking motivating. Let's see. All right. Moving on. Other rapid fire news. Oh, this one's pretty cool. So Dark Tessuya brought this one to my attention. I think this is pretty neat. We love the hiddenpalace.org because that's the website where they find like deleted things in games and old prototypes and old things. Well, they just released just in time for the 4th of July a Mondo report about a Street Fighter II Championship Edition prototype from both March and July of 1993 for the Mega Drive. This was the version that you may have seen in older magazines that were hyping Street Fighter Championship with the black bar at the top of the screen. The background didn't cover, because if you look at most versions of Street Fighter, the background goes all the way to the top of the screen. In this early version, the black bar was at the top there where the health bars are. And then that ended up going away in the actual version that they released, and it had the background that went all the way to the top. So it's a very large piece, and it's really kind of gets into that basically, for whatever reason, the first version of this was like stopped, thrown out, and a new one was started. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that there was like some behind the scenes boardroom stuff with counter moves by what Capcom was doing with Nintendo and the Turbo edition of the game that happened and all this stuff. So it's a fascinating read. And it's, I would have to spend an hour to go through all of it with you here on air, but I thought it was really neat. So I want to give that a plug over at hiddenpalace.org because we like those little hidden gem types of things. It's pretty cool. So, all right, moving on. That's it for rapid fire. So let's do world release dates and talk about the types of video games coming to a store near you this week. First in the U.S., Loki.
Not a whole lot. So we've got Catherine Full Body on Nintendo Switch, Subliminal on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Looks like we've got CrossCode coming to Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Bloodstained Curse of the Moon 2 coming out on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Deadly Premonition 2, A Blessing in Disguise, coming out on Nintendo Switch. F1 2020 on PC, PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Stadia. NASCAR Heat 5 on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. And last but not least, Sword Art Online, the Alcazation Lycoris on PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One.
All right, traveling over to Japan and looking at the releases there. Just a couple things on the Switch this week. Blair Witch gets its localized multi-language edition released on the Switch this week, as well as a Konami baseball game. eBaseball Powerful Pro Yaku 2020 comes out this week on the Nintendo Switch. And looking at the PlayStation 4 to see what's out there, we have a few more things. Sword Art Online, Alcazation Lycoris. I'm probably saying that wrong, but that game is out this week in Japan from Bandai Namco. Blair Witch also out on PlayStation 4. That same eBaseball Powerful Pro is out as well. And those are the big games. Oh, there's one more game called Overpass that's also out on this PlayStation 4 in Japan this week. And I'm assuming it's not talking about like a freeway overpass. No, but it is a driving game. So it looks like it's you're driving Excite trucks. You're driving the big Doom buggies in a lot of dirt and woodland type of things. That's Overpass. So cool. All right, how about Europe? Darksoccer's not here tonight. She has the night off. So Loki, if you wouldn't mind filling in for her with the Europe release dates.
Sure. So we've got kind of the same type of stuff coming out over there. So we've got Catherine Full Body on the Nintendo Switch. They're getting the Namco Complete Collection over there as well, also on Nintendo Switch. F1 2020 70 Edition. That's on PC, Xbox One, and PlayStation 4. We have the Story of Seasons, Friends of Mineral Town, and that's on Nintendo Switch. Hard West Collector's Edition on Nintendo Switch. Sword Art Online, the Alcazation Lycoris, I guess that's how you pronounce it. It's a made-up word. PlayStation 4 and Xbox One there. Guacamelee 1-2 Punch Collection on PlayStation 4 and Nintendo Switch. Deadly Premonition 2, A Blessing in Disguise on Nintendo Switch. And that's it.
All right. Well, in this part of the show, we would typically open up the mailbag, which you can email us at participate@orangeloungeradio.com. And we read emails here on the air, but we didn't really get anything for on air this week. So probably because we got a handful of things last week, with last week having been the 18th anniversary show. So a little more folks probably want to participate with that show. But just a reminder, you can send us emails if you especially one of the things I love that we get is sometimes we get like little mini reviews of games that we just didn't have time to get to on this show and talk about. And so people email us like mini reviews of games or something like that. And I'm all for more of those types of things. But anything that's on your mind you want us to bring up that we didn't discuss, or you want us to discuss a little more in detail, or you want to give your perspective on something, participate@orangeloungeradio.com is the place to do it, and we'll see if we get anything next week. In the meantime, some more news for you guys. Loki.
Yes. So apparently hackers are defacing some of the avatars in Roblox with Trump paraphernalia and also putting similar messaging in the profiles of these users as well, saying, ask your parents to vote for Trump this year, MAGA 2020.
Well, no, wait, so this is not profiles. Explain to me a little more, because like I can say anything I want in like my online gaming profile, but you're saying they're like hacking stuff into the game, like MAGA they're hats or something, or what?
So like actually on these folks' profiles. So like, you know how in your profile you can type little things and stuff there. So they're changing what the avatar is wearing. So in Roblox, you have this like Lego looking character that you can dress up however you want. And so they're putting the default avatar as wearing, since they don't really have any like Trump related shirts and like hats, they have to use like, for example, a running of the bulls red hat. And it's just it looks like a MAGA hat sort of, but not quite. And then there's like a bald eagle in front of an American flag as like the shirt. So it's kind of a stretch there, but then like the, you know, little message that they put in all of the different profiles. So like you can put a little message in your profile and that's what they put. It's not like they've really done too much. You can go and fix that stuff. And the thought is that it's only affected these accounts that had like weak passwords, which a lot of these are owned by like kids and stuff. They probably have really terrible passwords.
Okay, I get it. Because I'm like, this doesn't, like, who fucking cares? Some nerds went in and did some weirdo profiles, whatever. But I get it. So they've taken like established accounts and they're basically hacking them to become, okay, I get it now.
Yeah.
You're right. Kids probably have some pretty, I know a lot of adults that have crappy passwords too. So I'm not surprised, you know, kids have pretty easily guessable things. So teach those kids at a young age how to make a strong password. So.
Yes, definitely.
Acronyms are a good trick that I teach. Acronyms are very hard to guess. But you have to think of like a song lyric or something that only makes sense to you. And it's much like it's 1,000 times stronger when you can think of a song lyric from this song and this song, take the acronyms, put them together, and then it's much, because if you do all the same song, then somebody that maybe knows your password as an acronym of a song can figure it out. But it's going to be very hard if it's two random things combined. That's the best type of password. Combine a bunch of random shit together. So, all right. Anyhow, all right, well, let's move on and talk about, hey, this is interesting because this came up earlier in the show. And this was about microtransactions for Crash Bandicoot. Apparently they're getting called out already about, are you going to shove this shit into Crash Bandicoot 4 as well? Well, Toys for Bob, who is developing the game, went to Twitter to say, not happening. We're seeing confusion about MTX, microtransactions, in Crash Bandicoot 4, and want to be crystal clear. There are, all caps, no microtransactions in Crash 4. As a bonus, the Totally Tubular skins are included in all digital versions of the game. Now, this doesn't mean they can't change their mind later on, but I don't think
after those reviews come out.
I don't think Toys for Bob did the other, or did they? Did they do the remasters?
I don't remember.
I don't think they did.
It wouldn't necessarily be the developers.
That's true. If Activision wants it, Activision.
Activision.
Yeah. But maybe because of all that negativity or whatever. I mean, it's a pretty bold statement to make. And certainly something like that, there are no microtransactions in Crash 4. Like, that statement's going to come back to haunt him if that ends up being not true, because people are going to quote tweet that shit left and right, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
So, all right. Well, let's move on. Next story, Logie.
All right. So, this is something we kind of talked a little bit about last week at the end of the show, that there's a brand new mod out there or exploit for the PlayStation 2 that allows you to run games on burned DVD discs in your PlayStation 2 without a mod chip, without any sort of USB exploit or anything. It's just a way to burn your DVDs. And so it's this free DVD boot exploit that basically exploits the console's DVD player functionality and triggers a corruption in the video playback and then runs the game through that. So you can use it for homebrew and whatnot. I don't know if they necessarily have it running like full actual games. Oh, apparently you can. Okay, apparently I see that there's people running copies of Shadow of the Colossus on there. So
does that mean I could also run like Japanese games on my US PlayStation? Because that would be right.
You probably could, yeah.
Because I bought a Japanese PlayStation 2 back in the day just so I could play Beatmania 2DX and the other Konami Music games on my Japanese PlayStation 2. I might own non-thing, yeah.
I would love to try this, except for two small problems. Number one,
a working PS2.
My laptop doesn't have a DVD drive or a DVD burner. I have an old laptop that does, but I'd have to dig it out. Number two, I don't believe my DVD drive in my PlayStation 2 works anymore. So, I kind of stuck there. I do have the thing on the, I do have a hard drive for it, and I do have a modded memory card, but I never quite got that stuff to work. And I just recently did that because I was attempting to, that was back when I was trying to put like PlayStation 1 step files for DDR back on the cabinet, the edits and everything, and I never quite got that to work correctly. So I never bothered to try to see if I can get the backups of the games work. And I don't know if I have like that, if they're still on that hard drive or anything.
I was gonna say I have a working DVD burner if you need help.
And like at this point, like I'm not even sure I would even try to like bother with it, because I don't think I have cables that would work with my TV as is, you know, in HD or anything. And I could just probably emulate that on the PC anyways. It's like,
but, you know, and as much as our minds are all going to, oh, I can play all the games, you know, I couldn't before. And a lot of us, our heads are going, yay, piracy. I think Jason actually addressed this in the intro tonight. And I think it's a very good point worth repeating, is that this is great for preservation of games, you know, because like you said, all our PlayStation 2s are breaking. So this might actually be a really good way to make sure that old games that may never come back, like, you know, like, again, I keep bitching and moaning about the Guardian Legend, but which I noticed you changed your background on Twitch to be like a, is that like a remake or something, Guardian Legend?
It's a remake of, it's somebody, like, I was like curious, I'm like, has anyone tried to remake this game or like remaster?
There was a big, and this is it that you're looking at. There was a big attempt a couple of years ago. I don't think they ever finished it.
Yeah, I was
trying
to download it, but I can't get it to run, but I was trying to run it, but yeah.
But, like, I'm basically sitting here going, please let me pay you money again so I can play this game on a modern console without having to dig up my NES and blow on the cartridge and pray that the goddamn thing still works. Because you know I got Guardian Legend on cartridge. I have, like, two cartridges of Guardian Legend. Anyway, all that aside, with all this, making the PlayStation 2 can work again and to get these old games, this is great for game preservation. Is that, you know, these, even if a game that's really hard to get, like Rule of Rose, people will still be able to, because that game's a little wacky.
Or earlier, even not even necessarily a PlayStation 2 game, but I watched a streamer play the unreleased version of Saints Row on PSP, and that was hot garbage because it was nowhere near complete.
Do you want to hear my most depressing story? I think I've told this on OLR before, but I'm going to tell it again because I think we have some new people watching tonight. Hello. This is my most depressing story about the PlayStation 2 and the video game Rule of Rose. So you know that that game goes for like hundreds of dollars because there wasn't a lot of copies of that game made, right? So here's the thing. not only did I have a copy of Rule of Rose, I had a press copy of Rule of Rose.
Because I got that for you.
I know. And do you think I know where that fucking thing is now, Loki?
Nope.
Nope. I'm almost positive I just got rid of it in a past move. I was like, I don't need this anymore. I have too much shit in this house. I don't need this anymore. Was it through your connections? Or I thought it was a podcast thing. I thought we got it. Cause
No. You're right. It was a podcast thing.
It was a podcast thing. We had a little thingy thing going with Atlas back in the day because all these game companies were wanting to work with podcasts. You know, it was, ooh, podcast. What's that all about? So, yeah, I'm almost positive. Atlas, like, sent us that disc. And we talked about the game on air and all that stuff. We did everything we were supposed to do, but it's like, oh, I got rid of a promo copy of the most valuable PlayStation 2 game out there.
And Phoenix 7726S, is it any good? I played it, and I thought it was pretty good. It was a creepy game.
It is, really, but it's got a little, like, it's got a little Flowers in the Attic thing going on, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So some of those themes might be a little like, ooh, I don't know. So that's all. I'll leave it at that. But as far as like a competent psychological horror type of game, yes, that's why everybody wants to play it and why it's so goddamn popular, because it is a competent psychological horror game that's kind of gross and you shouldn't be playing it probably. So, yeah. All right. Phoenix7726 says, Rob, is that an old way of saying that it's problematic? No, I'm literally saying some of those problematic themes from Flowers in the Attic are also in Rule of Rose. Like, specifically that piece of literature. All right, anyway. SSG100 Matt says, Flowers in the Attic, that flew over everyone's head. Pixel Paca's LOL'd, so not everybody. Somebody knows what I'm talking about. Like, fucking Google it. What is the plot of Flowers in the Attic? But I warned you. All right.
Oh, I finally did get the Guardian Legacy or the Guardian Legends Legacy thing to run. I just had to install XNA, the redistributable. But oh, cool! I can play it now. Neat.
All right. Well, have fun with that. Do some recording.
I'll post the link in chat.
Yeah. All right. Moving on. We got one more story officially on the record tonight, and some folks in chat are like, why is toy in quotes? And what are we talking about with this story? Because it says on the sidebar, Animal Crossing toy in quotes. What does that mean? And, well, y'all, I'm talking about a butt plug.
It's not just for Animal Crossing.
I'm talking about a butt plug is what I'm talking about. Animal Crossing, it's in a whole report that Vice did where they have designed somebody out there who has a lot of free time in this pandemic situation has designed a way for sex toys to communicate with a Nintendo Switch and its haptic feedback capabilities. So when Animal Crossing triggers a little character rumble by like digging a hole or hitting something with a shovel, that same haptic feedback can go right in your butt. Literally. I love that the effect can be triggered in solo play. But there are multiplayer possibilities as well. So
what
anyhow,
about the integration with 1-2 Switch? I mean, cause
I love that they tied it to Animal Crossing when in reality, all it is that somebody figured out how to get the haptic vibrations that go in the controller to also go to a different device. And yet,
right, yeah,
it's Animal Crossing that we all immediately go for.
It's because Rez isn't on the Switch.
Not yet. But maybe they'll try harder to put it there in the future. Sorry. I'm screaming at this chat comment. This is my favorite thing. Pixel Pockets in chat says, Animal Crossing in my butt?
Like, seriously, like, who, I guess, you know, you got all this time with the COVID-19 situation, and so it's like, you know, I've got all this free time. Hey, I wonder if I can get this to work with this. Why not?
Sorry, I knocked all the Pokemon over because I died laughing. All right. Hype Mayhem in chat says, so Tom Nook can F you in the butt IRL, not just metaphorically in game. If that's what you want, sure. Bobby says the best thing is the name of the API that they're using, which I don't even know what it is, and I don't think I want to know. DJ Roma S says, can I get a link for this? I know someone who would buy this. Sure. Let's see. Where can you get more information on this? I'm looking it up right now because all I have are these stories that are going around. Oh, there's a GitHub for the project, and it is the username is Intiface. You can take it Intiface or Inti. All right, forget it. It's Intiface. So Intiface is the user on GitHub, and this is like Intiface console game haptics router. So there it is. Anyhow, enjoy that.
Well, that's interesting.
All right. Let's quickly move on to another story. All right. This is the part where I'm going to open up the listener roundtable in our chat. If you have any questions or things you'd like us to address on the show, you can go ahead and say those in chat. Unfortunately, they're probably still going to be talking about butt plugs for the next 5 minutes. So maybe we need a few last minute stories to help us shift the topic around.
Yes, we should definitely get something.
Okay. All right. Wait, let me say this because Bobby brought it up like that. Bobby said, hey, any news about Summer Games Done Quick? Why, yes. And you should listen to the Bobby Blackwolf show from tonight to find out. All right, go ahead. No, I'm just kidding. Bobby auditioned to be a host at Summer Games Done Quick. And good news and bad news. Bad news is he is not one of the 25 main hosts. But the good news is he's one of the backup hosts. So if Miss America cannot fulfill her duties as host, Bobby Blackwolf shall step in and be the runner-up host, I think is the technical terms for it. The details are on the show. It's a weird situation because you're like, oh, we really want to see Bobby get that opportunity. But, oh, if he gets that opportunity, that means somebody else had something happen where they can't do it. And that's very sad. So it's a tricky situation. So all I can really say is I'm just happy Bobby made it that far. It's his very first year of auditioning. I think there's something like 130 people that audition, and he's maybe 120. I don't know. But he's in like the top 32 then, 25 plus 8. He's in the top 32 of that. And that's still pretty impressive, especially your first year with like no guidance or anything beyond your own research. So kudos to Bobby Blackwolf. High five. And I would say we hope to see you on Summer Games Done Quick, although that's rude. So I'm going to say instead, we hope you get a lot of great experience at Summer Games Done Quick so that in turn we see you at Awesome Games Done Quick when COVID's all done, hopefully. Sound good? Good. All right.
So I've got some stuff that we can talk about. Did you know that there's a brand new DDR version coming out?
Oh, yeah. I did hear it's kind of like a rehash of Ace 20, right?
Yeah, so it's A20 Plus, and they're adding more songs to it as well.
I appreciate already. That because I love Third Mix Plus and Fourth Mix Plus. So
yeah, so it launched already on the gold cabinets on the 1st, but now it'll be coming to the blue cabinets, I believe, on the 8th, if I remember correctly.
Where is it launching? Arcades are closed. Are arcades still open in Japan?
I guess they are.
I guess they've controlled things. I guess I heard a resurgence is kind of like coming, but they're kind of managing it a little better there. But
I saw some.
My first instinct is like, where the fuck are arcades open right now?
Yeah, so they've got some new songs. There's four that were mentioned. So Destructive Force by Badmyth, Hyper Twist, Hyper Bomb in the past. And then there's Last Card by Chorus K. It looks pretty awesome. And they did some rebalancing. They have a new thing that's basically to check your level. So it allows you to see what kind of foot level you should be. I don't even know if they do feet anymore, if it's stars or whatever. But they're basically trying to let you know like what level you should be playing at, what songs may be right for you, so you can play that stage, and then it will assess you and let you know, okay, you're good for these songs.
And just
which is kind of cool.
Real quick, because I said, where are arcades open? But I'm being corrected in chat because, yeah, Bobby had that whole thing on the pinball arcade he did on a show a couple weeks ago. And he says, are Dave & Buster's and Main Event are open here? And, now that I think about it, bars it probably, if bars were open, I don't see why a place like Round One and Dave and Buster's weren't also open, especially like casinos and all that. Although, as you know, here in California where we're at, they, in all the mostly populated counties, you know, it's not every county, but it's mostly the populated ones, they've closed everything again. So they're not having it now. But yeah, you're right. I got to remember, the world ain't California. But yeah, going out to play DDR in public, like there, I can't think of anything I want to do less right now. I still think this news is cool, but I'll wait till next year. Thanks.
So, because we're clamoring for, brand new press events and stuff, I am happy to announce that Devolver Digital Direct 2020 will be airing on Saturday, July 11th. So we can look forward to that this week. I can't wait. It's going to be at 12 p.m. Pacific time on Twitch.
That should be fun.
And then apparently Nintendo is, they're not too concerned anymore about 3DS vulnerabilities. They have actually shifted their hacker bounty program to entirely encompass the Switch now. And no longer have any 3DS vulnerabilities in their program.
Nintendo officially no longer cares about the 3DS. Confirmed. Hack away.
Yep. Hack away. And then apparently there's a VR experience in Japan for Rockman over there. So Rockman VR aimed at the virtual world. I want to play that.
Oh, is that something like I don't know, like Mega Man Legend in like VR or something? Or am I totally off base?
I don't know. They said starting July 18th. It's, it'll be playable at the Plaza Capcom in Tokyo's Ikebukuro. And I don't know. They said it'll be a permanent VR corner where you can experience that game. It says, apparently in the game, says you don a headset created by Dr. Light and try to stop Dr. Wily. Well, that's pretty much every single game.
It actually kind of reminds me of another story that we cut from the list tonight. There was a surprising amount of news for this. I thought going into today, I was like, I think it was a slow news week. And then I'm like, oh, actually, no, it wasn't. There was a lot of stuff. There's an emulator that came out for the NES that takes 2D games and turns them into 3D games. And one of the Mega Man games was one of them. Now, it's not, I mean, it's more like not like a first person 3D, but it's like you kind of can tilt the play field kind of thing.
Speaking of the 3DS, remember back when the 3DS was releasing some NES games and there were a few that had enhancements where it would make some stereoscopic 3D stuff pop
out?
Yes,
I do.
It's
yes.
Basically that without the stereoscopic 3D.
Okay. I got
you. So they have like voxel support and stuff, and so like it'll make, you know, the pipes rounded in Super Mario Brothers 3 or it'll do stuff like that. And they have like a few hundred games that it supports that they've added these enhancements to. Pretty cool.
Can I just say real quick, and this is totally unrelated to what we're talking about, but just off camera over here, my husband is unloading the supplies from Target. And can I say how happy I am? Can you bring me like your gold star discovery that you got at Target? Can I just say how happy I am? Because I think this is a sign that somehow the earth will heal, is that Alan was actually able to find at Target the really good toilet paper. And there was a lot of it in stock, and it's not some fucking off-brand shit, and it's not some like one ply 99-cent store thing. This is this is gold plated toilet paper.
Yeah, it's only disinfectants.
It's like a blanket. Actually, wait, because I don't want this being an endorsement that he didn't pay for. God damn it, is their name like not on there somewhere? So this is a sign, perhaps, that nature will find a way. We will heal. Looking in chat at some comments. Orange Wright says, wow, Pixel Pacas put XD. SG100 Matt put, yes, I was so excited when I got the text message. I put, we're going to Vegas.
Hello.
Oh,
I'm not on camera.
Wait, I can do this.
Okay. Hi. There's a great, like, one-line Onion article that says, 2-month-long personal nightmare of using up the wrong type of toilet paper that someone purchased finally over. because like the husband brings home the wrong toilet paper, and it's like, this is, we have to use this now for weeks, and then once the final
it's
roll is gone,
all they have though, you have to just paper again. You have to buy what they have.
Well, everybody else is having to dip into their, you know, bunker supply now, so it finally leaves some nice fluffy three ply for the rest of us, and I couldn't be more thankful.
We're still using up the industrial like paper towels that I got a while back from Amazon, like the stuff that you would find in your office building bathroom. And to be honest, I mean, those things have lasted for months. Like, I still have like three rolls of that stuff left, and they were like massive. But I remember at one time, like the local grocery store by us, they could not get toilet paper in, and all they could do was get it from their supplier. And so it was like, it was that really cheap, cheap, cheap stuff that they're selling it by single roll. And it's like, I'll take what I can get.
Questbuster in chat says, you have added premium toilet paper to your inventory. Plus one to charisma. Yes. But yeah, we had like, we had just bought a big pack right before we went on the cruise. Cause you might remember we were on a cruise like the week before lockdown started and everything was fine with the cruise. It was nothing like you heard about with the other stuff. And we were able to use that for like months. I think we finally just ran out of that like last month, and then it was like, oh, the horrific off-brand supply has to begin now. So I'm so glad our long national nightmare is over. All right. Let's see. Other comments in chat here. Hype Mayhem says, nice teepee pun. Yep, that's what we're pros at here at OLR. SG100 Matt says, we went from talking about butts, and now we're back to it. And Azet, with what will probably be the perfect chat comment tonight, everything is about butts. Correct. Everything is about butts. Any other last minute stories?
No, that's it.
Then I think that's the perfect note to end on. So get it? End on? All right. Anyway, so that is going to do it for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. Thank you guys so much for checking out our show tonight, whether it was on the podcast feed or on Twitch. We really appreciate your guys' support. And you lasted through the whole thing. Congratulations. It's been a night of ups and downs, let me tell you. And it was only two of us here tonight. Like, it's something. Anyway, thank you guys so much for downloading the show or tuning in live. All we ask, we don't really ask for your money. Although if you do throw the subs and the bits, we're not going to complain. I'm gonna put that out there. However, all we really, really want, just help us spread the word. We are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we need your friends. We need your enemies. We need your frenemies here to help out and expand our audience because we are the show where every gamer has a voice. But if your voices aren't here to put on air, what are we going to do? So anyway, a nice 5-star review wherever you found this show goes a nice long way. Auto hosts on Twitch are outstanding, and I thank all of you that do it. Unfortunately, Twitch no longer gives me a list of who's doing it, so I can't thank you personally, but please know if you're doing it. I do see some of it on the stats stuff, like viewers who watch these channels also watch yours because they're always hosting or whatever. So we really appreciate that. So thank you, thank you, thank you. That takes us to, I believe, final thoughts. So Loki, with that all said, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners tonight?
I don't really have much of anything, but I did want to mention that Xbox Game Pass Ultimate right now is $1.
Oh, shit. Where?
On Microsoft's site.
Really? For
yeah,
how, like a month? Like for new people
for
only? Or can I buy 12 of them?
I don't know.
All right,
I'm trying to figure that out right now.
Take that with a grain of salt, because I have a feeling that could be a new people only type of offer. It's like 99 cents for your first month of insert thing here, and then you're subscribed.
I just saw it posted on NeoGAF, so that's why.
Okay.
And I went to the page, and it said $1.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
All right, we'll look into that. All right, and that's your final thought tonight?
That's my final thought.
All right. And my final thought tonight is, I think I said all my piece earlier in the show, so I'm not going to say too much more, but just, you know, thank you all for being here. I'm so thankful that there's a place for me to say shit on Sunday night, and there's people that actually want to listen to it. Thank you so much. We'll see you in 7 days to talk about video games all over again. Dark Sakura will be back next week, and I think she's here for the full show next week because she did a work thing where she's not working on Monday, so that's really exciting. So we'll be back in 7 days to talk about whatever happens in the next week. And with E3 not having happened and random announcements coming at random times, there could be a lot of stuff. In the meantime, I will enjoy my Burger Time machine. You enjoy whatever it is makes you happy. Have a wonderful night, everybody.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or Vogue Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.